It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard Campbell's here. Actually, Richard's in London, but that's okay. He's still with us. They're going to talk about the earnings learnings, Microsoft's quarterly earnings, lots of Windows news, AI news, even gaming news. It's a big, jam-packed, fun-filled episode of Windows Weekly coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Episode 866, recorded Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. Squishmallows with guns. Windows Weekly is brought to you by our friends at IT Pro TV, now called ACI Learning. I know you already know the name IT Pro TV from many, many years on our network. Well, now they're part of ACI Learning, which means IT Pro has expanded its capabilities, providing more support for IT teams. ACI Learning gives it all to you. They cover all your team's needs in audit, cybersecurity, and information technology with the best, most engaging, most entertaining, most informative training. They'll provide you with a personal account manager to make sure you aren't wasting your team's time or your time. Your account manager works with you to ensure your team only focuses on the skills that matter to your organization specifically, so that you can leave the unnecessary training behind. And I have to tell you, ACI Learning has kept all the fun and all the personality of IT Pro TV, yet they have amplified their robust solutions for all your training needs. Your team will be entertained while they are informed, while they train. Short-form content, easy to digest, and there are now up to 7,200 hours of content to choose from. That's pretty amazing. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. For teams that fill out ACI's form, you can get a free trial and up to 65% off an IT Pro Enterprise solution plan. go.acilearning.com/twit. Hello, windows and dozers, winners and dozers. It's time for Windows Weekly. Whatever. You know who you are. That's because this is the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft, and you're dying to earn those learning earnings all to yourself. Paul Thurrott is here. He's going to take the role of Mary Jo Foley, I guess, today with the earnings learnings from Thurrott.com. This used to be Mary Jo's job. Now you got to do it. Sorry.
You can do it.
I have faith. Richard Campbell's also here. Well, he's not here. He's there. He's over the pond in sunny old England. How sunny is sunny old England, Mr. Campbell?
Not as sunny at all. It's January, for crying out loud. It's gray and grim. But, I made it to the Whiskey Exchange today, so I have something to show.
Not so bad.
There'll be a little show and tell later on today.
All right. But first, I guess... earnings, yeah.
We're in earnings season again, my least favorite time of the quarter. How I forget. This is part of how I cope with things. I just forget, and then I sit down and I look at my feed, and I'm like, oh, God, Microsoft, Google, Intel, AMD, what's going on? It's just a bunch of stuff. So, obviously, we'll start with Microsoft. They're doing okay. The little startup that could from Albuquerque is cranking along.
We're a long way from 1977.
Yep. It's funny. I bet you there are a lot of people who don't know that Microsoft's first corporate headquarters was in Albuquerque.
Yeah. I wish they were still there.
That building is labeled, right? It's got a big plaque on the side of it.
So when you're washing your laundry next door and buying a crack on the other side of it, you have a place you can look at.
It's nice. Part of town.
Yeah.
It's a nice Central Ave. It's nice.
They ran there because Mintz was there, right? And they wanted to do Altair Basic.
That's right.
Well, and did do.
Yeah. For me, I used to live in Albuquerque, so it was a big deal. You know, I had to run down there one day to find out, you know, to look at this place. And I was like, really? This is it, huh? That's too bad. It's probably a little nicer now, but last time I was there, not so good.
I remember one of the MVP summits when Bill was there, somebody had found, had an original manual for the Altair Basic. I think it was the second version, the 16K version. And the back page of it literally said, if you need support for this, call Bill Gates and a phone number.
Right. Like seven digits.
And so he started to wave it.
505 was not the area.
Bill let him come up on the stage and he looked at it and signed it for him. And he was moved. Like he was emotional about it.
That's super cool.
Bill was or the other guy?
Bill. The kid was certainly.
Because I would have been like, so I can call you now, right?
Yeah.
He probably said, did you pirate this?
Yeah, exactly.
Give me back my paper tape.
By the way, my Altair is running right now. It's solving the advent of code problems.
Nice.
Some year it'll be done. No, it's not. Sure. It's playing a little game with itself.
We're going to give it the quantum computing upgrade.
Ooh.
There you go.
Wouldn't it be fun
to stash a large language model inside that Altair?
Yeah, you can ask it questions. Yeah. All right. So Microsoft's earnings came out. What? Give us the yesterday. Give us the top line.
Broad strokes. They're doing okay. Like I said, basically almost $22 billion in profits on $62 billion in revenues. Those figures are both up double digits. Revenues are up 18% year over year. They're doing great.
Yay.
No big changes with the top three business units, or the only three, I should say. Intelligent Cloud still number one, $26 billion in revenue, basically up 20% year over year. This is Azure, right? Productivity and Business Processes, Microsoft 365 essentially is almost $20 billion in revenues, up 13%. And then More Personal Computing closed the gap a bit because of Activision Blizzard, which we're going to get to. $16.9 billion in revenues, up 19%. If you pulled Activision Blizzard out of that business, we would, how we'd laugh the rest of that. But they're looking pretty good. I have some bullet points here, but the more interesting stuff to me is going back and rereading the transcription of the call they have with analysts after the announcement. And obviously, everyone's asking questions about AI. How are you going to pay for this? How is this working? When are you going to be profit? You know, how's this all working out? So there's a bunch of interesting stuff in there.
Did they actually answer any of those questions? Because I don't imagine they would.
No, they do. I mean, it's actually, this is the second time in the past year where I felt like their answers were actually pretty clear. And, and not, obfuscating anything in any major way. I will also say, for whatever it's worth, Satya Nadella, I think he's a little bit wooden. But man, that guy can speak quite eloquently about AI. He loves it. Yeah. And I think that says a lot about him as a person, but also why the company is so serious about this. It's very clear he understood.
And this is the bet he's made, right? Like he's all in.
Yeah. But let's, if you don't mind, let's start with Activision Blizzard, because I found this to be kind of interesting. Last summer, I ran some numbers on what Microsoft would look like if Activision Blizzard had been part of the company already, right? Mm-hmm. And now that they are, I'm delighted to report that the thing I wrote last July was really accurate. Like it's within like a half a percentage point, and the broad strokes on that is that the impact on More Personal Computing is huge. The impact on Microsoft as a company, not so huge, right? Because Microsoft is humongous, right? We saw $62 billion, right? So I don't remember the exact numbers, but in that year I looked at, revenues from Activision Blizzard were in the $2.4 billion range. Microsoft, we're talking $60 billion. So you can see it's a kind of a smaller deal. But
a billion here, a billion there, you might actually show up on the balance sheet, right? Like it takes a lot to make a dent in that company.
Yeah. So More Personal Computing had really almost 20% growth this quarter. Microsoft Gaming.
Because of the acquisition.
Yep. Huge. Right. And it's all because of this. Right. And so this is the deal. Microsoft also, speaking of clarity, explained in great detail how they're paying for the costs associated with this acquisition. I don't mean the $69 billion exactly. I'm talking more about the 10,000 people that came into the company when they bought this other company, all the redundancies, the layoffs, and all the reorgs and all that stuff. And so there's actually kind of a neat little bit in there where they kind of talk about all that, and that the deal is within this fiscal year, those costs are all going to even out. The big takeaway for me going forward is that this business within a business, Microsoft Gaming, right now is operating at about 38% higher costs than they were like a year ago. And it's because
they laid off something like 2,000 from Activision already.
Yeah. Yeah. And from other parts. Yeah. Right. So, you know, this is a typical situation where you kind of bring this company in-house in this case, right? It's not a separate organization.
Yeah.
So you have all these redundancies all over that part of the company. So
yeah, the whole marketing engine is going to change. The HR group is changing. Yep. Like all of that's going to change.
Yeah. So hopefully they pick the best from the best and kind of go for it in that fashion. And, you know, unfortunately there will be layoffs, like probably more in the future as well. But
yeah,
the goal is within the next, 5 months for this to kind of iron out. And then this thing will be like a net win going forward, I guess. So, you know,
the question is like, are they going to leave the game teams intact? Because it doesn't seem like they've been really great with game development teams.
So without
with Bungie.
Right. So without knowing explicitly, I don't remember the exact number, but Activision Blizzard across their 10,000 employees had several dozens, whatever the number was, of their own studios, right?
Right.
And Microsoft also has many, many studios of their own, and some of them
might be some facilities consolidation too.
Yeah, and I think it's possible that the big studios that worked under Activision Blizzard, you know, the studios responsible for Call of Duty, et cetera, will probably be the same, you know, that for the most part.
Well, in their cash, Call of Duty is a cash cow, but you have to ship a product to make that money on it. World of Warcraft and Diablo, now that's some serious cash cow, which they get monthly returns.
Yep.
And you have to produce a certain amount of content. So, I mean, if I was reporting to Satch about how this thing is going, it's like, is that team intact? Are they in track to keep folks engaged? I mean, World of Warcraft's gotten a lot of pressure from the Sony Final Fantasy Online product. So they've got every need to be more efficient and to keep growing the pattern. And it's hard to be a new user to World of Warcraft. It's about keeping the existing market.
I mean, depending on the studio, depending on the product, they're probably going to want to keep it, you know, them where they are geographically, in roughly the same, you know, situation they were before, right? Just keep them happy.
And would think that a company like Microsoft that knows a lot about software developers, no, you disrupt that team, it's years to get back to the same product.
And you may never actually get back. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might
break the product.
There's also a fear with Call of Duty. It's already been broken, and that, you know, we're just going to witness.
Blizzard broke it before they got their hands on it. So now they need a reboot.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I mean, they've needed a reboot since they wrapped up, I don't know, the initial set of Black Ops games, maybe. So whatever that was, 10 years ago. It's been a while, but.
But this is what happened to Halo, right? Like,
oh, yeah. Yep.
There is a case story for you lose a team or at least you lose the heart of the team. And now, you know, what's the state of those products? But that's fine if you're just releasing titles. It's another thing when you've got a monthly and you're going to watch your mistakes bleed you month over month.
That's really dark, Richard.
A little graphic. But this is the thing is imagine you've bought a goose. It lays golden eggs.
Yep.
Don't screw it up.
Yeah. Now it's just bleeding.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yes. So yes. I mean, we'll see. I mean, this is, I'm a simple person. I just want to see Activision games on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah. And that's certainly part of the cross marketing and so forth. But, you know, someone who's done a bit of M&A and been on the, how do we preserve the culture side of the problem? It's like, these are the things I would worry about is how do I keep these key teams in place? How do we know there's going to be a new Call of Duty in 24?
One of the ways would be, how about some Microsoft stock options? That stuff's going through the roof right now. So that would be one idea. I don't know. It is interesting though. Microsoft actually spelled out how much Activision contributed to the growth in the various parts of the business. And if this thing wasn't happening, we would be having a very different discussion about the future of more personal computing right now.
Well, and very likely they'd be acquired something else. So they'd be going in that they would tell the story differently, Paul. They know how to keep their shareholders happy.
Well, I mean, right. But it's we're close enough to when they finally finalize this deal that if it hadn't gone through, they wouldn't have had a chance to do anything by now. Like we would have been witnessing what, like an ugly holiday quarter looks like for a business that's based around gaming, which should be doing gangbusters, you know, or at least is partially through gaming. Anyway, I sort of appreciated the clarity on that. Although, you know, it's Microsoft, right? So One of the things they reported was that they now have over 200 million monthly active users on Xbox, PC, and mobile, and they mobile for the first time, right?
200 million. That's a huge number.
It's a huge number, but of course, my first question was, okay, but what compared to what? Like, what was it before? And the only thing I could find, because they do this a lot, they don't do this quarter over quarter, but back in the July quarter, they mentioned that there were 150 million active users. At that time, they were just talking across the Xbox ecosystem. And so I guess it went up by 50, but they also talked about how Activision Blizzard brings hundreds of millions of users to Xbox. So it's like, if anything, you would almost think it should be higher, you know? But it is a big number, you're right. So, you know, Activision Blizzard has a pretty big reach.
Sure, for a relatively small number of people when you think about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, all in all, it was a good buy for Microsoft, but I don't know. They don't have a great track record with game studios, except the ones they leave alone, right?
And they're absolutely not doing that in this case. I think that was part of the marketing of this purchase, though, that they were going to fix the culture.
Because there was something to fix.
Yeah, I think that
purely cultural, right?
I think that might explain it. Yeah,
It's not like Bethesda's knocking it out of the park with every game they make either. Looking at you, Fallout 76. but that wasn't Microsoft's fault. I would hope there's some folks from coming in on the ZeniMax level and saying, guys, are we doing the right thing? Are we building the right product? Like, are we making people happy? Because they've got some great labels too that would be well worth to Fallout. Fallout is an amazing story that could be tapped a lot of different ways.
It should be a series on Netflix. I don't understand why it isn't. And maybe it will be someday. Yeah. I mean, Half-Life is the same thing. Why has that not happened?
Because everybody that works for Valve is extraordinarily wealthy.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Content middle-aged white guys. Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, the upside to Activision Blizzard and Microsoft too is there's a routine set of hungry hires looking to get more of their stock units allocated, and you can get them to do stuff.
Right.
But the collective that is Valve, everybody's very well paid.
Yep. Nobody needs another Tesla. Chances. Yeah, they're doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's mostly it on the gaming part of it. When I go through the earnings, I go kind of back to front because I focus mostly on the consumer stuff, right? And it's a small part of Microsoft in some ways, but it's getting more interesting thanks to Activision Blizzard and AI. Yeah. You know,
I think this will be this time next year. The conversation about Activision Blizzard will be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, AI too. By the way,
under Microsoft's control, getting through Christmas season, that's going to be a big deal.
Can't wait to see what.
I don't know if it'll be good or it'll be bad. I hope it's great.
I'm looking for it just being the same, which would be fine.
If every one of their major labels ships a product for in October this year, they'll have killed it. Like, that's a win.
You have described something that Microsoft has never done with their gaming business, but I hope that happens too. I mean, we'll see. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but yes, I hope you're
right. And I hate to say this, but it's like, this is very Sanofsky-esque. Sanofsky was the trains run on time kind of guy.
Right.
Like, you want someone, it's like, you will make the October deliverables for Christmas or you will but be
I can't. Oh, it does not work in games.
but it is how games work, without a doubt. You have to write to the deadline, which is why you tend to ship lousy software, because you write to the deadline and we'll fix it in the DLC.
Okay. Well, anyway, I don't want to beat gaming to death too much up front, because we're going to return to this in a moment, at the end of the show, actually. But just to round out the rest of more personal computing, there's a little business called Windows that is also part of that.
Never heard of it.
Well, it's kind of an operating system for these big devices that you can't carry in your pocket. Yeah, it's like smartphones but dumber. So
will it run AutoCAD? Oh wait, it's the only thing that runs AutoCAD.
They've had a couple of bad years post COVID, and as we're seeing with the chipset makers, both on PC side and on mobile, it looks like things are starting to finally kind of come back to normal. Intel saw some growth on this side of the business. AMD did, again, both companies after months and months quarters and quarters of shortfalls. And, you know, their Microsoft's revenues from PC makers actually grew and grew by double digits, right? So last quarter was 4% this year. This quarter was 11. And the previous two before those two were 12 and 28% declines. So right. You can kind of see how that curve is going. That's
turned
good.
The corner.
Yep. They keep using this phrase. Things are continuing at pre-pandemic levels, nice. Which is a bit of a stretch if you know anything about pre-pandemic levels, but certainly.
I think we're predicting the demise of the PC pre-pandemic too.
Well, so. the question then was whether it would ever bottom out, and then the pandemic kind of knocked things around in the opposite direction. But it looks like we're in the right trajectory, certainly. Commercial was also up. Commercial Windows revenues, I should say. Those are kind of tougher to predict because these are just based on purchase cycles that we know nothing about, right? These are things that mm-hmm. companies keep internal and are basically secret. So, but 9% growth is great. And this is a business that has seen growth in all four of the previous quarters. So they're doing good. And that's basically all we learned about Windows. Although I'm just going to throw this out because I thought this was an odd thing. Microsoft, like all other companies, makes these kind of milestone statements. You know, they have a quarter, something happened, we made money. And then they talk about some of the things that they shipped or achieved in the quarter, and they don't always tie. In fact, they often don't tie directly to any revenues of any kind. So, for example, in Microsoft's case, the one that stuck out for me was Copilot in Windows is available on more than 75 million PCs. This is across Windows 10 and Windows 11. 75 million. Here's the thing. Copilot in Windows is a free upgrade that everyone gets automatically.
Yeah.
And once you put it on Windows 10, I mean, wouldn't it be on hundreds of millions of PCs?
Shouldn't it be billion?
Well, that's what I'm saying. A potential audience of a billion, right? I mean, so yeah. I don't know what to make of that. That's a shockingly small
number. In any other statement, 75 billion is a huge number. This is not one of those. This is a tiny number.
Yeah, it's very strange.
2%? 3%? Like,
well,
what the hell?
Well, if you just base it on a billion, make the math simple, it's three quarters of 1%, 7%. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Or 7.5%. Yeah. 7.5%, I guess. It's small. So
even a billion to me seems low. There's more than a billion Windows 10 devices out there.
Yeah. I mean, but Windows 10, we'll guess, is somewhere around a billion. And then Windows 11 is the rest, whatever that is, a couple mm-hmm. hundred million, maybe. But still, this just seems odd to me. I feel like everyone kind of gets this, and I don't quite get that one. So maybe they're measuring actual usage somehow, or they didn't say.
As they a monthly active user out. Kind of mindset.
Yeah. Impossible to know. Mm-hmm. You also get little floating factoids like Windows 11 commercial deployments were up 2x year over year. 2x from what? Was it zero last year? Like, we don't even, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And again, these things are fairly random. No big companies are going to ever publicly discuss their strategy for rolling out a version of Windows internally. Nobody cares, you know? So, and I will also point out this doesn't impact revenues at all because Microsoft doesn't care which version you use either. They get paid the same regardless. So
no matter what,
These are just, I don't know what you call this kind of a data. It has nothing to do with the bottom line.
They're happy noises.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little thing. You can feel them kind of cherry picking from around the data totally. They have.
I've done enough investor relations to know with my wealthy investors, I need to give them a sentence they can say to their friends in the clubhouse.
Okay.
Doesn't matter that it's meaningful or it actually quantifies anything, but it's a sentence they can say to their fellow wealthy people.
Okay. Well, that's definitely, I didn't publish this article yet, but I coined the term non-mot as opposed to bon mot
right.
today.
A non-mot.
It's a non-mot.
It.
Yeah. Right.
They are happy noises. Yeah. Headlines without definition.
Surface is circling the drain, frankly. And I got to say, this is revenue decline was only 9% in the quarter. And I say only because this was far better than they expected. Previous four quarters were 22, 20, 30, and 39% shortfalls. It's been a brutal couple of years for this business. And unfortunately, the water that is starting to lift Windows does not appear to be working for Surface. So,
but they don't have a leader. Who's fighting for him?
Right. He's so faithless, I can't remember his name. You know what? That's not fair to him. I'm sorry. That's on me. I actually don't remember his name. That's on me. He's a nice guy.
The replacement for Panos.
Well, the guy for the Surface part of Panos, right? So they introduced him at that October event. And I'm sorry. I apologize.
You were there.
I don't. I was there and I met him. But that business is now focusing on higher margin premium products, which I take to be the last step. You know, it's kind of like when Lumia kind of focused, you know, a little bit and then went away.
And here I am with a Surface Studio 2. Like I'm literally exactly in the market. I bought the most expensive thing they made.
Yeah. And you didn't help them at all, Richard. I got to tell you, they're not doing great. It's too bad. Because I like Surface.
At least I'm part of that 9%, man. At least I did something.
That's right. It would have been 10%.
It's Yusuf Mehdi who's taken over.
Oh, no. Well, since that, no, Yusuf Mehdi has since moved on because now he's running some of the Copilot stuff.
Oh, wow.
He was kind of in there for like 2 seconds and now he moved right along.
Holy man. Because that was the October gig where they announced that Yusuf was taking over for Panic.
Well, but this, the person I'm thinking of is directly Surface and Yusuf is not in charge of all the stuff. It's different people now. And then the other big one I wanted to kind of talk about was just AI, because obviously Microsoft is spending between 10 and 15 billion, or at least that's what they said 1 or 2 quarters ago. I think it's actually higher now. And there's a couple of interesting points in there about AI. And I'm going to read a quote from you. I quote to you and tell me if you come away with the same takeaway I did. But obviously everyone asked about AI and the cost of AI and, you know, when you start becoming profitable from AI, and there's a lot of happy noises there too. But buried in more personal computing is a business I don't discuss too much over time because it has never been particularly interesting, which is search and advertising. And this is like, you know, Bing, MSN, Start, and Microsoft Advertising, right? Mm. The past year, there's been a lot of noise and news about Bing. The biggest being that they went to market with the AI stuff, starting with Bing, and then quickly backed off from that. And as we hit the end of the year, the brand was now Copilot, and we're not talking about Bing anymore. And Microsoft made sure that this capability was available in multiple places, not just on Bing. And, you know, the market share, usage share of Bing didn't move the needle at all.
Right.
Some issues there. So that business actually grew by 8%. This is the search, news, and advertising thing. And it said it would have been better, except a combination of higher search volume and the continued unfavorable impact from a third-party partnership. What do you think that was?
Yeah.
I think it had to be OpenAI.
Can you really say that? You can't say that.
He did.
They're making money. They make money off OpenAI, but it's
Money. No, they do. But that's over in a different part of the company.
Right.
The part that holds Bing more, they're just paying for it. So what they've done is they've driven traffic. They've not monetized it effectively and they're not paying the bills. So that maybe explains helps explain why they went to market so quick with Copilot Pro, right? Get people paying for it. That will help them now.
Part of that revenue can go back to the Bing team.
Yes. And they can also detune the free stuff a bit. You know, you'll have more of those error messages. We're sorry, we can't do that right now. Or, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, maybe if you were paying for this, this would work.
All
that's my guess.
I mean, if you bought Pro, this wouldn't happen to you.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And then, of course, the other bit is how AI impacts the other parts of the company. And for the short term and possibly the long term as well, the big benefits to Microsoft are going to come in the Azure side, which is intelligent computing, and also to Microsoft 365, right?
Yeah.
And they confirmed it wasn't like a genius idea I had, but I basically came to the conclusion that Copilot Pro and Copilot for Microsoft 365 were Microsoft establishing higher end SKUs of Microsoft 365, essentially. SKUs that were much more lucrative. And this is the, you know, the multi SKU strategy that Microsoft Office started back in, I don't know, 2003, the latest, has always paid off for them big time. Microsoft tried it with Windows. Remember with Vista and 7 had, you know, several different product versions. They kind of scaled that back. So now we have two, but it's always worked out great for Office. One thing that they've seen on the Microsoft 365 side is they add these more lucrative SKUs or more, higher end SKUs. They become very lucrative, like businesses, you know, everyone falls for that same, that upgrade thing. You walk in to buy the cheap, you know, stripped down car and you walk out with the Ferrari or whatever.
Well, it's always the thing is you go in thinking you're going to buy the lowest SKU and then there's enough things higher up that are add-ons that when you do the math, it's like just buy the higher SKU.
I literally just did this myself. You know, I'm paying for Copilot Pro. I walked in like thinking, yeah, right. And I'm like, oh no, $20 a month. Nailed it. Yeah. So yeah. And they, now this is, I'm contorting this a bit. And I want to be super clear about this. Someone asked Satya Nadella about GitHub Copilot specifically because he talks so excitedly about it. And he was talking about how this thing was so crucial for that audience. And he's right. Of course he is. But he made some allusions to productivity. And I want to be clear. What he's really talking about is Copilot, you know, GitHub Copilot. But
yeah,
I think
the
this
one that
applies
to data.
But I think this also applies to Microsoft 365. Now, so what he says is, he's talking about the economic benefit of the productivity benefits. And he says it's like if you took away spell check from Word, I would become unemployable. Similarly, it'd be like if I, you know, GitHub Copilot becomes core to anyone who's doing software development. If you take it away, they become unemployable.
Yeah.
Microsoft's goal clearly is to make Copilot for Microsoft 365 / Copilot Pro have the same value.
Essential to the information worker.
It's so essential that paying that much money becomes a no-brainer.
Right.
Right. That's the goal. And that's, you know, they obviously have different ways they're monetizing AI through Azure and APIs and all that kind of stuff. And they're, you know, they have their own platform and they have customers that are using that. But as far as selling directly, well, I guess those are customers as well, but selling directly to businesses using like end user productivity software, I think the goal is, you know, let's drive it there as well.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be successful just based on my very limited.
Well, and plus experience so far. When you talk about M365, they've been trying to find ways to surface the graph to facilitate businesses since M365 started. And this is the current generation idea. And I think it's a pretty good one. Like it's
now that
you're describing the goal and it's leveraging the graph to get you to your goal, who can be mad about that?
Yes. Now, you know, the fear that I raised, I don't know, I guess back in December or whenever that was, I guess it was in early January when they announced these products, like all of a sudden, hey, we're out, you know, is the same fear I have now, which is that there is that problem where the same wave that lifted you during the cloud computing wave that's starting to lift you now during the AI wave could come back and, you know, tsunami you.
Yeah.
And that's when you underdeliver, right? Or, 2 quarters from now, Microsoft has to finally admit that actually only some tiny 0.4% of whatever our commercial customers have even looked at this. And, you know,
well, this gets back to your 75 million users of Copilot, right?
Like, right, right.
That's what you're afraid of, is that they don't adopt it. That doesn't seem to be happening in M365. Like,
well, yes. So here's
the loudest noises I heard was what? 300 seats minimum? Come on.
This is the tier strategy. So years ago, this was a conversation I actually had with Chris Capicella when, you know, Microsoft Office was this business that they sold software directly to people. Basically, I mean, really most people got it with a new computer or whatever. So they assumed it was part of Windows. They didn't realize they were paying extra for it, whatever, but people acquired Office in a certain way, very successful. They at one point claimed 1.5 billion users.
Right.
And then Office 365 came along and Microsoft 365. And those numbers are relatively smaller. Actually, today they're not so horrible. On the commercial side, it's somewhere in the 300 to 400 million range. I didn't see it in this quarter. On the consumer side, it's under 100 million. It's something like 78 million, something like that. Doesn't sound like a big number, right?
To anybody else, it would be.
Yeah. And back when I had this conversation with Chris, these numbers were much smaller. And he said, and, you know, kind of seeing this, the future that now exists today, that, you know, the thing you have to understand is that some number of users doesn't help us if they never buy it again. Right. So we didn't get 1.5 billion sales 1 year. We got it over, you know, 10 years or whatever the time frame was. And then when you look at, you know, we don't go from 1.5 billion to 1.6 to 1.7. We go from 1.5 to 1.5 to 1.5. So we have this, we've reached this, that we've done it. Like, this is as far as it's ever going. And the thing we, you know, they look at as a company is like, how do we induce people to upgrade and how do we raise those numbers every year? And it's hard. And then the subscription service thing came around and changed the game completely.
Yeah.
The people who pay Microsoft every month, whether they're businesses or consumers, are much more lucrative. I mean, this is obvious, but you get into a situation, I see on my own site, I'm sure Leo and Twit sees on their service. Spotify reports this very explicitly every quarter, where you have some tiny segment of the population paying you and some giant segment just getting ads. And that tiny segment is worth dramatically more money per person than mm-hmm. the ad supported people, right? And that's true for Microsoft with these tiers. And the reason why, you know, E3 is so much more lucrative to them than E3 is to down to whatever else they might have. And this is where Copilot has the real chance to change the game for them, because it just dramatically raises the average.
Nice.
So even a smaller, like a subset of a subset that pays for this additional thing is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal in ways things like, what's the paid version of Microsoft Teams called? Microsoft Teams Pro or something, or whatever that is.
There's Teams for home and school.
Yeah.
But parentheses free.
Right. Right. I mean, you can see the scale, you know, but Copilot is so valuable that I think it's going to work, you know. And where I was sort of, I didn't understand it back when I talked to Chris, the numbers were so small. I just couldn't understand how this could ever make sense. But now that they're bigger, you can see how it makes sense. You can see the growth that Microsoft 365 has, you know, quarter over quarter, year over year, whatever, for many years. Right. I think this is going to jumpstart another period of growth for these businesses.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Right. I'm hoping that, and this is where I thought the minimum 300 seat thing was smart, because it means the graph has a certain richness in it. You right. want to surface new knowledge about the organization to their workers without them being miners of that. And it just sort of appears. I'm concerned that the folks who go down to the smaller sets are just not going to get good results. And make no sense.
They're not going to get the same results for sure. I don't know anything about. I don't have a business. I couldn't pay more and see that, because I don't have that kind of a business. I'm very curious.
I kind of want to index all the content on Thurrott and see, you know, what the machine learning model had to say about that. We certainly answer the question, have I already written about this, is useful, but then it's just a search engine.
Right. There are a lot of people who are more technical than I am, who write, you know, for publications online, who have done things like that. And mm-hmm. that's very interesting. People are building, you know, one thing as a writer that you see in other writing and can't stand and try not to do as a writer is use the same term repeatedly in the same sentence or paragraph. And when you're writing about a company like, say, Microsoft, you say, well, Microsoft did this and blah, blah, blah. And then the software giant did that. And then the firm something, something. And then the company, you try not to. Microsoft, 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 right? And someone built a little LLM that is an SLM, really, right? That's designed to help them overcome that.
I don't think right? I don't think she even.
Do you know? Oh, you saw this too?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think she trained it. I think she just asked ChatGPT or Copilot.
Okay.
And
but it's a good use. It's
what's
a good
another
use
way
for it,
of
right?
saying like, Microsoft or the company? You know. Yeah, it's a great use for it. If ideally, you trained it on your content, I think somebody at the information was doing that. Train it on your content, then you could, you know, maybe say, how have I phrased this in past quarterly reports? Or
I have done, as recently as this past week, I've written thousands of words on a topic. And then I referenced some things I had written earlier. And then I realized I've repeated myself a bunch of times. And I don't mean in language. I mean in literal, just I'm having a discussion about a certain topic. And I've written about this. You know, it's hard when you write as much as I do to, it's in your brain. It's like when you talk to someone, you're like, I've told people something's happening. Are you one of those people? I don't remember. You know, that kind of, you know, we must.
That's
all
what I want.
Everyone's.
Yeah, that's totally what I want. You're repeating yourself, Leo. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I've always told this story myself. 12 times. Yeah. Thank you.
Repeating is fine. Skipping is the problem. You don't want to be the broken record.
Did you? You haven't mentioned yet. Microsoft saying that they're going to put Copilot on Vision Pro.
I didn't.
The new Microsoft. I mean, Apple Nerd Helmet.
Yeah. Well, good for them. That'll be fun.
That's one app for the Vision Pro. Are there any others?
They're going to do Teams. Teams. They're going to do a whole bunch of stuff.
I very specifically have tried
OneNote,
to be
Outlook, PowerPoint,
open minded about this Apple thing.
Oh,
but now that it's plopped into the marketplace, I just can't generate any enthusiasm for it. I'm trying really hard not to be like that, but I just don't care.
Good.
And it makes
glad.
Me feel like a jerk, because if this thing takes off, I'm going to look like a jerk, and nobody wants to look like a jerk. But
it ain't good. I just don't want to.
I just don't see it.
Pee in anybody's Cheerios. I want to let them enjoy their cardboard.
Actually, I think you could, because they can't see you, Leo. Just walk right up and let it rip, you know? What's the difference?
Yeah. I can't imagine doing productivity.
See those weird bug eyes in the dark.
And... Was HoloLens, I mean, they wanted to do productivity in HoloLens too. Did that?
HoloLens was, well, so here's the two phases I remember for HoloLens were the initial announcements where they had no idea what anyone was going to use this for. If you go back and look at that very first one from January 2015, they showed off a video game, right? At the second one, they had a 3D version of Minecraft, right? Which wasn't the full game. It was just an experience. And we stood in a room and you could see Minecraft and there was a like a castle on a table and there was a hole in the wall and bats flew out of it.
Yeah, so cool. I remember that. Yeah.
It was really cool. But what the heck is
for it?
But what's the product? Like what's the, you're talking about a device that's going to sell in the hundreds of thousands and who's going to develop such a thing? So anyway, the second phase was we have threw it out there. We've seen what's come back and what we've seen is, some reasonable, I keep calling them niche markets. It's not fair. Vertical markets, right? I always cite the car makers. Instead of walking around a model made of clay, you can walk around a model that was made in AR space or whatever.
Sort of floating model. But Alex Kidman was always big on the verticals. Like he didn't want to just fire it out to the ecosystem, see what happens. He pursued the construction vertical and things like that.
Maybe one of the few things you ever got right. I mean, I always thought that the demo where you're working with wiring and the little guy is in the window and he says, not the blue wire, the yellow wire, you know, that to me always, you know, like, that would be useful. I could use that. Would I pay $3,500 for that helmet so I could use it for 10 minutes with the one day a year I need it? No. And that's,
but it made sense. You know, for the folks working on jet turbines and, you know, repairing heavy equipment, like anything where the cost of the equipment was so much higher that it's not just the $3,500, it's the $1,000 in Azure you need a month to run that thing. Right? It's expensive infrastructure.
Yeah. If Microsoft, I don't know how it happened. If Microsoft approached the Army or the Army came to them, I don't know. I don't really care. I don't think it matters. Mm-hmm. But if that hadn't happened, if they hadn't found the one entity in the world that is known for spending $12,000 on a hammer or $20,000 on a toilet seat.
But it's also all consuming. So they ended up doing nothing else.
Well, you know, I honestly, for that business, I mean, looking at survival, I think it made sense because I don't think the rest of it was going to amount to anything.
I think some other verticals could have been out there. But also tech giants don't like small markets. Like it has to be a multi-billion-dollar business for it to make sense. So I don't know that Microsoft would have stayed in where, you know, the Army dangled a gigantic carrot that nobody got.
Right. So I think HoloLens would have disappeared years ago if that hadn't happened. I just think it wasn't going to make, the technology was fascinating from the get-go. It got way better with the second generation for sure. Remember we used to have that kind of field of view problem.
Yeah, the field of view was a bit bigger in the two, but it still wasn't good enough.
So it wasn't perfect. Yeah, but it was demonstrably better. And, the feeling at the time was like, they'll keep doing, you know, every gen over gen, we'll keep seeing, and it's that we had never got past two. Actually, we're still on two.
Well, so, I mean, I've talked to folks that are like, they're waiting on hardware. When the right hardware comes down the line, they'll make another one.
Okay. We'll see. I guess we'll see. I've heard that too, but it's been a while since I heard it, but yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while, but I heard it recently as last year.
Okay.
They're still a team. They are kind of in stasis. They're kind of hung on the Army thing, which isn't quite dead yet. They're taking care of a mittful of verticals that do use it. And everybody wants new hardware, but until they have a compelling story for the new hardware, they're not going to pull a trigger.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder what kind of a human being would sit still a part of a business like that waiting for something to happen. But,
Tim Cook, by the way, is the human.
Yeah. Well, and also a guy who's got enough money that it doesn't,
he can do it. Yeah.
And then the Microsoft guys' jobs are on the line, right?
Like, yeah, but a lot of those guys, the experts who were working on that stuff, went to Meta.
A bunch of them did, without a doubt, and now have gone elsewhere.
Right.
Because, I talked to one of them and said, dude, I'm getting a sinus bonus that I can sign a house with.
Yeah.
All I have to do is stick around for a year.
Yeah.
Right. And then one way or the other, I'm going to walk out of there with more knowledge about contemporary VR than anybody else. Tell me the downside to me.
Yeah, but you know who gets the big bucks is the AI researchers. Man, that is a competitive field right now.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Right. Million dollar signing bonus.
This is going to be the side hustle of 2024, how to correctly prompt a GPT to get something you want, you know?
Well, no, where the money is, the tech giants that aren't leading that are trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Like you, who's spending a lot of money right now? Apple and Facebook.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Right. I don't know that Amazon's taking it seriously still. And Microsoft and Google are in the race.
It's funny. You could point to any of these companies and say, like, how are they like Microsoft? You know, and Google, obviously, strong parallels. But Amazon, honestly, and I think, God, it could partially be because so many ex-Microsoft executives went through there as their first stop outside the company. Yeah. But there is a real Microsoft kind of a vibe to Amazon sometimes, isn't there? Kind of a slow-moving
Microsoft.
Yeah. You know, like, it's interesting. So I don't know. I can't understand what Amazon's doing. This is a company that has a giant consumer e-commerce business and a giant cloud computing business. And this thing lands right in the middle of exactly everything that matters to you the most. And what are you doing exactly?
You know what biggest curse for a company is to be successful, I think. It's really tough.
It makes it hard. Leading sucks, right? Yeah. Chasing is something you know how to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's pause briefly. I know you have more earnings learnings, and man, we have learned so much, but my brain is feeling heavy. My heart is being sad. No, it's not. Oh, it's happy. It's happy.
Yeah,
it's happy.
It's a great time.
I did not buy a Vision Pro, but Micah did. We got one for Micah.
Did you talk to Elmo online this week? Is that what this is?
Yeah, Elmo. No, no, I did not talk to Elmo.
Did you hear about Elmo? He went online to find out how people were doing, and what he got back was the saddest story of all time from everyone who was circling the drain emotionally.
No one's doing well right now, which is weird. Shouldn't have.
Don't ask that question.
It's a weird thing.
Usually when people ask you how you're doing, they're just being polite.
They don't really
They're not looking for a dissertation on your divorce and everything that's wrong with your life, you know?
No. Just say fine.
Suddenly we've got...
Keep walking.
Suddenly it's Cutter Elmo just trying to feel something.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right. On we go. What other learnings have we got for these earnings? I just wanted to get a little Elmo break.
Just a couple of companies. There'll be more next week, right?
I love it. I would make the point, you know, Microsoft kept warning us that they were going to have a tough year in 23. And that's why they were laying off. And that's why they're doing the cutbacks. And all they've had is record year over year.
Well, that's everybody in the tech industry. And they've already, in this month alone, 25,000 tech jobs up in smoke. That's just bizarre.
I'm of two minds here. So there are people who would hear what you just said, see, they could have afforded to keep paying these people. They should never have laid those guys off. And yikes. Hold on a second. To me, the real crime here was that they hired too many people during an upswing that everyone knew was temporary.
But the way they did those layoffs didn't cull the deadwood either.
It culled the most expensive people.
You know them and I knew them.
Yeah, I know.
They got lost.
Yep. Yeah, but you know what? All this proves to me, this is something that would never have occurred to 30-year-old Paul, but, you know, 20-something years later. This just shows me that big tech, these companies that we think we know so well, Microsoft, Google, whatever, are just like any other big company.
Just big corporations.
They're just that stupid.
Just be reminded.
They're just that terrible.
Well, and I'm also reminded of the Hanselman line, we are not organized enough to be as evil as you think we are.
Yes. That was always my thing about Microsoft was, you know, back when they were the evil empire, is like, guys, you don't understand how disorganized this company is. There's no concern
about that empire here.
It's a bunch of little fiefdoms of angry people. It's not, you know, it's not a giant concerted effort to crush.
Yeah, with varying degrees of enthusiasm for their next promotion.
Yeah. So speaking of other companies that are as terrible as Microsoft, Alphabet/Google, net income of $20.7 billion, revenues of $86.3 billion. What's the number? I always put this in here somewhere. Yeah, 76% of their revenues came from what? Google Cloud. No, I'm just kidding. Advertising. They're terrible.
Yeah.
Although
never going to get past that.
Well, you know, Google, Alphabet, whatever, like Apple, right? Like Microsoft back in the day when it was just Windows, are trying to diversify. And they do have two businesses that are growing pretty strongly. They're still small compared to advertising, but subscriptions, platforms, and devices, right? So Pixel and whatever associate things, 18.5% growth, $10.8 billion in the quarter.
And Google Docs and the like, goes under that.
Yep. And then Google Cloud, which is kind of their, you know, Google, their cloud, I guess, 20%. That stuff's been going pretty well, honestly, $9.2 billion. So
I hope they're building enough infrastructure because they still seem very Valley centric.
Yeah. Well, so we're talking about $20 billion. I mean, just to kind of put those together, right, those two things. I mean, more personal computing was only 16.9 at Microsoft. Yeah, Microsoft 365, productivity and business processes, 19.2. So that's not horrible. I'm just saying it's not horrible. I compared to the advertising stuff, small. Because Wall Street, these results were not met favorably. These guys made, I just want to be clear about this, $65.5 billion in revenue from ads. And Wall Street said, not enough.
It was supposed to be $66 billion. They blew it.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. I know this world is screwed. Well, like, that is just so mental.
It's those perverse incentives that keep this whole thing churning. That's why they lay off people. I mean, it's just really, it isn't sensible.
Stuff blows my mind.
Yeah.
It's nuts. We might have talked about Intel last week, but I'll just mention it quick because it factors into AMD this week, which is that Intel, let's see, last week was this is for a quarter, a net income of $2.7 billion on revenues of 15.4. And that was a gain of 10%. It was the first time all year that Intel's revenues actually went up year over year. And remember at the time they were saying, among other things, like, we're starting to see that PC rebound. So this week we got AMD telling a similar story, smaller numbers. I think a lot of people, you would think when Intel is the wounded lion stumbling across the savannah, that this younger, faster moving thing is going to overtake. It's not even close. Like, no. AMD, for all
it
of
somehow as still much, puts, puts a paw, knocks them on their butts.
Yeah. As much as I love AMD. Yeah. We're talking, this is $667 million in profits.
Yeah.
On revenues of 6.2 billion. So a vastly diminished Intel is still almost three times the size of AMD. Like, it's, and you know, they're starting to turn things around. So,
I mean, isn't AMD, the other number you want here, the TSMC numbers?
Yeah, right. So I don't know that we'll ever see those, actually. Well, no, that's not true. We get those. I don't have those, but these are companies that are, you know, come from that traditional PC market, and they're expanding into the data center. I bet Intel has a much, I could just look it up. Let's see. So I want to find it. So AMD's data center number was 2.3 billion in the quarter. It was up 38%. They're doing great, right? So Intel, which I didn't put into my, no, I said it, was 4 billion. So 4 billion for Intel versus 2.3 for AMD. There you go. So basically twice as big. But AMD grew 38% and data center for Intel, dun, 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 down 10%. So there you go. Data center is the one area where AMD maybe has a chance, right? And that's kind of that's the bigger business. I mean, ultimately. So the threat to these companies is not just NVIDIA, right? Or any other actual chip maker. It's these companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, Apple, whatever, a Google, they're all trying to do their, they're trying to kind of wrest control away from these companies and create their own chips. And of course now they're partnering for now, of course, but I think the goal is to use the fab, you know, the fab owners to make their own chips and kind of bypass these companies. So we'll see. It's going to be a much more diverse market for microprocessors and other chips than we've had, you know, for 20 years, really. I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, well, and governments are pouring a lot of money into bringing chip manufacturing home because of the threats going on in Southeast Asia.
That's right.
Which is going to diversify it more and distort profitability, right? There's going to be a lot of, you know, the whole motion to get that stuff happening in North America again is they're heavily subsidized.
State-sponsored subsidies?
Yeah.
Is that an accurate term?
Well, at the same time, you know, I think there's a recognition that you make your own chips in your own country the same reason that you make food for your people and vaccines. Like, it is an essential service. It is strategically important. And so it doesn't have to be efficient.
I just want to be able to treat an employee of Intel the way I would treat like a police officer or a mayor and say, I pay your salary.
But if you're looking at TSMC numbers, like, they're in the $20 billion quarterly revenue range. Like, they're the same size.
This is
they just don't own any of their chip designs.
Right. I was going to say it's a different kind of business, really, right? Because before this was like all integrated into one company. That's the Intel model. They're still trying to do it.
Yeah. But I would argue more profitable because they are only making chips that people pay for.
Yeah. Right.
Right. As opposed to Intel, it's running those fabs, experimenting with chip designs.
Right. Yeah. They're eliminating the biggest cost and the biggest risk.
Sure. That's the foundry model. At the same time, it's like innovate. This is not where innovation is going to come from. It's about reducing cost rather than innovation, making something new. Not that neither AMD nor Intel has made anything profound recently.
Well, you don't think that the Core Ultra chips are profound?
Dun, dun, dun.
he says leadingly. Not sure if that's a word, but obviously these days it's about efficiency. So for the fab guys, you're looking at smaller and smaller processes, and Intel's, I don't know enough about hardware design to know if this is truly innovative, but these kind of 3D designs that they're working on and so forth.
I would argue the biggest thing that the most important thing that TSMC owns is a set of skilled engineers in making very small, five nanometer chips.
And I bet they live in a walled community that has armed guards.
Yeah.
I
know they're building fabs in North America. The question is, are they training those engineers?
Right.
Like, are they going to have people who know how to run those machines well enough to get the yields from them that people want? Anyways, it's a fascinating story. I love the hardware.
About the domestic stuff, but we'll see.
Well, I'm only pointing out because the earnings numbers are going to get harder to read over the next few years as this market fragments further and runs under substantial subsidy.
For the Microsoft guys in the audience, I would just say Microsoft used to be the biggest the only company in personal technology. And now they're and also ran, but they're the biggest company in the world. So there's a bigger pool to play with. So I think for these companies that may, like Intel, for example, dominating their world, struggling now, but they could emerge as a, not the dominant chip maker anymore, right? They'll be one of whatever number, but there's a profitable future where maybe potentially, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm sure they're looking at Microsoft and saying, yeah, we want that. We also wouldn't mind some regulatory ignorance, on our part, stop thinking about us because we're not number one anymore,
They've definitely played that card a few times.
Yep.
It's like, don't look at us. We're the little guy.
Yeah, exactly. Poor little Intel.
We're not controlling the market share. Yeah. I don't know what you're worried about.
We'll see. Anyway, look, we knew what we were.
And let us kill this competitor, by golly.
I think the constant state of change is what keeps things interesting. And for people with ADD like me, it makes it hard. So, we'll find balance in here somewhere. All right. And that's it for now. I guarantee you next week we're going to have, three to five more.
Wait to hear from Dell and HP. So exciting.
Yes.
What about NVIDIA? Have we already heard from NVIDIA? Because they're the ones who are.
I don't think we have this quarter.
Their stock last year went up 700%, I think, something like that.
They're in the trillionaire club.
Yeah,
right?
By market cap, they were the biggest, it was revenues. By some measure, they were the biggest hardware maker in the world last year. They're not really, right? Not objectively, but.
They don't even make hardware, do they?
Yeah.
They make their gear.
They make video cards. What do you mean?
NVIDIA? Do they? Or do they just do reference designs that other people make?
Oh. No, they sell directly, at least in the data center. I'm pretty sure. I believe so.
Yeah, the NVIDIA quarterly report not expected till mid-February.
That'll be the fun one.
That'll be exciting.
I like the stragglers. You think you're over it, and then you're like, oh, finally. And I can wait like 3 and you're like, oh, come on.
Gotcha again.
Come on. Like our quarter ran from April 17th until like what?
It's like it's like the NBA season. It just keeps getting longer and
a few more games.
Exactly. There'll be one team starting up for next season that's still playing the championship from last season.
Exactly. Formula One's like that too. They keep adding races. Oh my god.
Right.
All right. What else? What else do you got? You got Windows? You got any Windows?
We do. We got some Windows.
Can I just before
I don't know the name of the show? But.
It is Windows Weekly. So let's do it.
Right,
let's do it.
That's why not?
Why not?
Just for nostalgia's sake, really. At this point, It seems like
remember
lately,
Windows?
The,
remember Windows? That was so much fun. Now we're all using spatial computing with nerd helmets.
Yes. Yeah, right. This is more like Windows, Weekly. So last couple of weeks now, we've been getting these insider builds like after the show. I'm sure that's not on purpose, but Thursday, Friday, whatever it was.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not. Canary dev and beta stuff going on. So the Canary Channel one was to me the most interesting, and I've been kind of waiting for it to be interesting. They were talking, there's a Windows Studio effect feature called Voice Clarity, which apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently it was Surface only, and you had a very specific Surface, right? One with an MPU, which they're going to bring to more computers now, basically all computers with MPUs, I would imagine. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I think they're going to bring it to all computers. I think it doesn't require an MPU. They're going to do it without an MPU. So that's kind of fun. But the big one to me was that they're redesigning the first phase of the Windows setup process, right? So if you know about Windows setup, I call the first part of it, which dates back literally to Windows Vista in some ways, but honestly beyond that, because that's it's really based on the NT setup from the 90s. We'll call that the first run experience because I don't really have a name for it. Most people are familiar with the out-of-box experience, which is that graphical thing that everybody sees, right? So if you buy a new computer, you fire it up, Windows logo pops in. That's the out-of-box experience. So that changed at the beginning of Windows 11, and it's been updated a few times since then, but the visual change, the big one, came with Windows 11. So with this big version of Windows coming this year, whatever it's called, they're going to change that, the first phase of setup. And I threw it in a VM just to kind of check it out. And I was like, you know, this looks awfully familiar. And the reason it looks familiar is because it's actually like 10-year-old code. It's the same design that they use in the Windows 11 installation assistant, which is something you can download from the, you know, when you Google download Windows 10, it's the first choice at the top. It doesn't look like the stuff that's been in Windows since, Windows 8 really. So Windows Vista and Windows 7 showed something that looked like an arrow window over a colorful backdrop. They styled it differently between the two systems, but that thing was actually a bitmap. It wasn't a real window there. It was a single image. And my belief is that because they needed at the time this thing to fit on a DVD, they had to strip out the bitmaps and they made it kind of really plain. So starting with Windows 8, it's just plain purple, but it's an actual window. And it's drawn in the least expensive way possible, if that makes sense. It's probably literally Charles Petzold C code with every window attribute stripped out of it so that it's the most basic window imaginable. It has, you know, minimize, restore, close buttons, and it has the window button on the left, and that's it. There's nothing else going on there. And I think literally it was done for, you know, like I said, for disk space purposes. One of my big tips for Windows is that this process, this Windows installation media that you create, can also be used to repair Windows. So instead of creating like a recovery drive, you should just create this installation disk and just put it somewhere. So if you ever can't boot your computer and can't get into the recovery environment, you can use this thing to boot the computer, and it, you know, it works great. But it's when the way it looked before, it wasn't obvious. There's a little text thing. It's like 1 point big in the bottom. It says, hey, you can repair your computer too. Now it's a top level option. And I think that what's going to happen, I think they went back to this older style and they'll update the language over time because there's some weird reversions in here. Like they actually talk about DVDs. They're like, your product key will be found inside the box where your DVD was. It's like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, it's crazy, right? But it's kind of interesting. And I think, I don't know if they still have that same arbitrary size limit, whatever a DVD was, 4.7 gigabytes, I think, if that's a thing. But I know that the actual size of the Windows setup, it varies by version, but I think you need like I think it's an 8 or 16 gig USB drive to make this thing. So I don't know what they're doing exactly, but I'm just fascinated. I document this for the book. Obviously I run through this all the time. I see this stuff, not every day, but every week for sure. And the fact that they're actually touching something this low level in Windows right now is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's Canary. And then, Yeah. The dev stuff, just minor big fix, bug fixes, nothing really worth talking about there. But beta channel, there's some big news, right? So same thing with the Windows Studio Effect coming there. They're doing snap layout suggestions. So they'll look at the windows that are on your, I'm sure it's AI powered. It has to be, right? Look at the windows on screen and like suggest layouts that make sense for those applications, which, you know, we'll see how good that is. But it's the biggest news addresses a longtime complaint in the Windows Insider program, and I'm hoping and assuming it's going to come to all the channels, which is that they will let you unroll a PC from the beta channel on the fly. You don't have to wait for some future milestone. You can just check a box. It will reboot. It will install the stable version of Windows. You will lose, obviously, features that are not there because, you know, it's stable, doesn't have all the features, but you can actually just go back. You don't have to wipe out the machine. So I think that's smart. I think that's the way it should have always been. By the way, that's the way Android works. If you test Android betas, you could just, you know, I mean, I think iOS probably does the same thing. It's, you know, there's a nice separation there. It doesn't always work, I guess. But I mean, the ability to separate your data and apps and whatever from the system and just kind of revert to a stable version of the operating system, to me, just makes sense. So
yeah.
Hopefully this is a good sign.
That's pretty cool. Well, and it just be, I mean, what I'm getting from that is like, maybe you were right. Canary will be 12, like more than ever. It seems
I hope so.
But also the rollback for beta sort of speaks to 11 is coming to an end. And so they're making changes in a way that are easy to recover from.
Right. I linked to the wrong article for this next thing, but I will correct that.
The Chrome ARM thing.
Yeah. So, There are a few web browsers that run natively on Windows and ARM. I think Firefox is one, and I feel like some of the Chromium browsers, including Edge, obviously, are native. But Chrome to date has remained, you know, x86. And so back when Windows and ARM first came out, you'd have to go manually go find the 32-bit version, right?
Right.
Because that was the only one that was compatible. And then for a while, when you could do either, it was actually the more efficient version, but I think in Windows on ARM today, I believe if you just go get it, you get the 64-bit version. We have that emulation and we don't run 32-bit code anymore. So that's the one you're going to run. That's what you get. But they just released to their Canary channel the first build of Chrome for Windows and ARM. So I downloaded it and checked it out. It's nothing dramatic going on there. It's not like you all of a sudden everything works faster and better and whatever. But it is a native version. That is important. I don't know why they're doing it now, but maybe this is one of, you know, many indications that this will be the year. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, well, and I just wonder if it's because Microsoft, they didn't want Microsoft to just take that market.
Like, yeah.
We've got to do a build. And it's not that hard to make it.
It can't be. Microsoft's doing it. No, I'm sorry. other people are doing it. I mean, so, you know, if companies building Chromium-based web browsers can do it, of course Google can do it, right? I mean, so. So that's good.
They put an intern on it. He got a build out.
Exactly. Right. Just so if you get this to compile, we'll put it in Canary. Yeah.
We'll call it good.
Microsoft Edge is, I'm using this, the wrong links on everything. Right?
Yeah, no, you're doing a great job.
I'm doing good. So, you know, it's been that kind of a week. So this week, this has been going on for a long time. I don't know why this is in the news right now, but there is a very good chance that what people don't understand is that something's happening behind the scenes that they agreed to. Because one of the things, when I started writing the Windows 11 field guide, I got to the Edge chapters and I realized there's a lot of chicanery going on here, right? When you first bring up Edge, you go through these three screens where you're like, you want to all your stuff on all your computers. You're like, yep. You're like, do you want to import your stuff from Chrome? Like, yes or no, you know, that's up to you. But to me, that's like a one-time deal. You do it once and then you use the new browser, right? That to me is the point of that. Yeah. And then the third screen is like, hey, you want to make your web experience better? And like, if you actually look at the fine print, what you're actually agreeing to is a lot more tracking. And yeah. I think what Microsoft is doing here is commingling this notion of you said yes to importing stuff from Chrome. And you also said yes to always keeping your thing up to date. So we notice you have Chrome on your computer. We're going to make sure you're always up to date, and they're starting to do it in new ways to some people on some computers. This is actually, like I said, it's been going on for a little while, but the idea is that you're using Edge and then you can access tabs that you would only open in Chrome. before, right, in your history. And it's like, wait, what? So the issue here, as it is so often the case with Edge, is that people are like, I didn't agree to this.
Yeah.
And
You did. You just didn't know what you were agreeing to.
Yeah. The Verge says that this started after installing like some new update for Windows 11, but this is, you can look this one up, but people have complained about this for a little while. So I'm not really sure what to say to this. Other than that, you shouldn't use either one of these browsers, you idiots. And, think about it.
What were you thinking?
What are you doing? Yeah. So I don't know what's happening there, but anyway, I have not experienced this and, cause I don't, you know, I would never. Speaking of which, there's a new version of Microsoft Edge last week. We talked about various web browsers. They're all in the same schedule now, right? Basically.
Yeah.
This one is only interesting because Microsoft Edge is going to be used in these managed environments. We have a business. And one of the promises, I think it dates back to when they were talking about what, you know, 23H2 or whatever, was that they have kind of a new work experience, right? That's it's really just profiles with a different name, but they were promising that they were going to let businesses using Entra ID brand the browser. So you could have like a logo up in the corner. So it's like you work for Throt.com. So you get a little T logo up there or whatever.
Right.
That is finally available. So they have links to the Microsoft Learn website where you can, as a business, you can learn what policies you have to implement and what assets you need so that these things are delivered down to your users. And that happens. And then for normal human beings, they're changing the way the browser alerts users about updates, like browser updates, because now these things are updated every 10 seconds, it seems like. I think it's every 4 weeks technically now. But before, if you wanted to manually find a browser update, you would go into Settings app, like the About interface, essentially, and it would say, hey, oh, there's a new version. It just starts downloading it. And I suppose if you waited long enough, it must do something. It must put something up in the corner where it says, hey, you're out of date. Microsoft Edge has this unique little interface called Browser Essentials, which hasn't been too essential to date, honestly, but it's getting kind of interesting. And if you ever look at that, in fact, let me just bring it up now so I can see what's in there exactly. This is where you access things like the VPN service that they have is one of the things that's in there. There's some power and efficiency stuff in there, some safety stuff, which is nonsense. They don't do anything for your safety. Yeah, Edge Secure Network is the name of the VPN. So you can do that kind of stuff. I actually saw for the first time in my life, because I don't use Edge a lot. I use it mostly just when I'm writing the book or whatever. But it actually complained that some of my tabs were taking up too much memory.
Wow.
I was like, look at you. And so it made some I don't use sleeping tabs, and that might have been part of the problem, you know, whatever, but they're going to start promoting Edge software updates in this interface. I mean,
it should really be telling you how long you've had that tab open too, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. Well, we just talked about Arc, right? It could just be like, you know what, we're just turning it off.
Yeah.
You know, you're not using this thing, right?
I know folks who leave browser sessions open for days, and they leak memory. Like, they just get worse and worse and worse and worse.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so memory leak is, even when you close the old pages, the memory doesn't get better. It's not until you close all of them that finally that whole thing gets junked, and when you reload, you come in much lower footprint.
There's always a double-edged sword with Edge, because you look at a feature like this and you think, yeah, I mean, this is logical. It makes sense. It's helpful, you know, whatever. But it's also one of like 1,000 of these features. And that's the problem with Edge, is there's too much of this stuff. You know, I'm probably never going to write this article, but if you just look at like screenshots of Edge, you'll notice like the UI is always in different places. You're like, what's going on? It's because you can configure it however the hell you want. Not only do they move it around, but you could go up to the corner and say, like, I want my profile button up there. No, I want it down here. I want the workspaces icon there. No, I don't want it there. Like, it's different all the time. And it, you know, that's the new Microsoft way, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I have not seen this myself, but apparently today they've started rolling out a redesigned version of OneDrive for the web for consumers, right? So OneDrive.com, you'll see this. And this is, in some ways, it's kind of similar to what actually you see in OneDrive for Business. You get this kind of like, I think they call it For You section up in the top. And they're trying to anticipate what it is you're looking for. And I kind of wish they wouldn't, honestly. When I go to a site like this, if I go to OneDrive.com, it's very specific. I just want to get into the file system, find a specific thing, and get the hell out of there. And They're looking at it more of a destination. So it kind of joins Start menu in Windows 11, the Microsoft 365 app in Windows 11, you know, office.com. It's, you know, what are you doing here? Like, what's your point?
And it's like, it's trying to do the Facebook. Hey, here's a picture from last year. Yeah. Aren't you excited? Haven't I helped you? It's like, interrupted me again. Get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't come here for helpful suggestions. I came here to get something done.
You know? I had some stuff to do and you're interrupting me.
And then I just threw this under Microsoft 365, even though we don't have any other stuff. But I think it was Friday.
The Teams outage.
Teams went out.
Oh, yeah. Like 8 hours, right?
Yeah. And there was like a conga line online of people who were like, oh, my God, this is so nice. So
great.
Yeah.
Like nobody can bother me now, off. You know.
Don't call me anymore.
Yeah. But much like that Microsoft hack from a week or so ago, I'm curious about what happened here, right? It's most likely a human caused configuration error. Microsoft called it a networking issue at one point. They never really
explained
what happened. And they also, when I went, I think it was Saturday morning or even as late as Saturday afternoon when I looked at the admin center, it still told me they were looking into several of these issues, but Microsoft was publicly reporting that they solved the problem and everything was fine. So it's kind of hard to say, but this cascaded across the entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they fixed it. It seems to work. We're Monday, so it's early. I don't know, but I'm confused about what happened there. And I think I'm going to continue to be confused because I don't see them ever coming clean about this. They didn't say anything about nation states or anything like that. It was just like, sometimes good software goes bad.
Did you, I don't know if you listened or saw Steve Gibson's piece yesterday. He was quoting Alex Stamos on the Microsoft break. Alex wrote a piece on LinkedIn.
Not John Stamos from the...
Not John Stamos. Alex Stamos, yep. Who...
Full House, yeah.
Yeah, no, Full Alex House, is a very well-known security researcher. He's now at SentinelOne, but before that he was Stanford's Internet Observatory. And you remember that... Zoom brought him in when they had some embarrassments in security. Anyway, Stamos really reamed Microsoft on this email thing. He said this is not an issue of, as we might have thought, the bad actors getting an email account. This is far worse. Furthermore, he pointed out that at least 10 other companies seem to report this OAuth failure breached them as well, right?
Since we talked, there was a second and then a third update to this story from Microsoft. In the second update, Microsoft said that they discovered there were 10 other companies that had been hacked using the same technique and they alerted them. That was the same day that HPE came out and said, hey, by the way, this happened to us as well. And the third one, the one where they basically said, yeah, we didn't configure 2FA on this account. Basically, it was like that stupid. And it's like, guys, come on. I don't know.
And my suggestion was it was an internal only account, so they didn't bother. And then somebody made it public some way, and it hadn't been locked down properly.
You said something that I think is exactly what happened, which was, in a company the size of Microsoft, you have a guy, he shows up, opens a test account, he's got to do a test VM, whatever it is, and I have to do something with it, whatever it might be. And then, hey, Bob, do you want to go to lunch? Yep. And then they take off, and then he goes to a different company or a different part of the company. And it's just one of many kind of ghost VMs or accounts or whatever they are out in the world. And there's a version of this where you could kind of make the argument that Microsoft has these built-in tools for assessing things. And this is going to be an unpopular position. I'm not saying it's mine, but maybe they found it quicker than basically any other company would have. I mean, given the complexity of their environments and all the machines and users and whatever. I mean, people like us would be like, how could this happen to a company like Microsoft? We trust them for our security, blah, blah, blah. It's easy to get really, outraged over everything these days. But
and generally speaking, their customer facing stuff is pretty damn good. That's not what this is.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I think the one thing we've said all along, we said this last week, I'm saying it right now, we'll say it again in the future, is I think there's more to this story. And maybe Alex Stamos has some information about that. Maybe there's more to come. I don't know. It feels a little I think the thing that bugs, the one thing I, in the back of my brain, not being a security expert, but the thing that bugs me is that they were in there for so long.
Yeah. It took as long to detect it as it did.
Yep.
For a company that sells products for rapid detection of breaches.
That's a little alarming. Now we are on the cusp of this AI era, and Microsoft is about to tout someday in the near future. They're using AI.
You were supposed to detect these guys without a machine learning model.
I know.
Right. Like that's, the reality is somebody from Russia logged into an internal test account. Yeah. That should be a flag.
Stamos was on CNBC on Friday night. He says that he believes it was flaws in Entra, Active Directory. And Microsoft 365. Quoting Alex Stamos, Microsoft's language here plays this up as a big favor they're doing the ecosystem by sharing their extensive knowledge of Midnight Blizzard, when in fact what they're announcing is that this breach has affected multiple tenants of their cloud products.
I mean, that's not what they said.
Joseph Menon of the Washington Post has several sources indicating at least 10 companies were breached through Entra.
That's interesting. Okay, so in other words, it's not that this hacker group used the same technique to attack all these other guys. It's that they were able to do it within Microsoft's infrastructure.
That's Stamos's.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. He says, calling this a legacy tenant is a dodge. The system was clearly configured to allow for production access as of a couple of weeks ago. Microsoft has an obligation to secure their legacy products and tenants just as well as ones provisioned today. It's not clear what they mean by legacy. Microsoft does, however, offer us some solutions. They upsell us. He calls it the cybersecurity Hall of Fame. Microsoft recommends potential victims of this attack against their cloud-hosted infrastructure buy Entra ID protection or Microsoft Purview Audit or Microsoft Password Protection for Active Directory.
Yeah, this is the school hard, you're at bully tactic. This is what Microsoft, remember when Microsoft used to sell antivirus? Let me get straight. You built an operating system that has vulnerabilities, and to fix those, what you're going to do is charge me to buy other software that fixes the vulnerabilities.
But they also turned around and did give it away in the end.
It took a lot of pushback.
I've had the argument with Microsoft on RunAs about the why do you charge for additional security, and he said, listen, the line gets crossed when we're paying people to watch out for your stuff. That's what you have to pay for.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, software, you get all the software stuff that's included with every account. But when it's actually active monitoring, that's people that cost money and you pay monthly for that.
Microsoft should pay for that service itself then, because maybe those guys would have found this.
Clearly they didn't. You know, that stuff's expensive. Yeah. Why would they?
Right.
I'm not going to disagree with them that there's more to this than meets the eye. There's no evidence that there's an exploit here.
I thought I was cynical. I got to tell you, that stuff you just read, I was like, yikes.
Oh, it gets worse. Let me tell you.
It's brutal.
He says, 21 years after the trustworthy computing memo, it's once again time for some soul searching in Redmond.
Oh, God. Get off of the soapbox.
I should also point out, Alex now works for a company that sells its own security product, Sentinel One.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. So,
There just seem to be some
20 years after the trust. God, what the? What? Like, dude, jeez.
I mean, there is an argument.
Have a drink and relax. Yeah. You know?
Anyway, there's also a glass houses thing here where
be careful what you say.
Well, I will say that the notion that, you know, Microsoft did say we found other companies that were being hacked the same way. I mean, how would they have known that?
How would they have done that? What do they know?
So that is interesting. I didn't make that leap myself. I will say that. So that's kind of interesting. Okay. We're all hosting on the same infrastructure. There's a bug in that infrastructure that allowed this to happen.
He says Azure AD is overly complex, lacks a UX that allows for administrators to easily understand the web of security relationships and dependencies that attackers are becoming accustomed to exploiting. Yep. And in many organizations,
I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Yeah.
That's true.
And in many organizations, Azure AD is deployed in hybrid mode, which combines the vulnerability of cloud and on-prem identity.
I just want to be clear. That is not how Microsoft markets that product.
Anyway, it's worth a read. Take it with a grain of salt. He's certainly
it's a little alarmist.
It's a little extreme. Yeah. But that's an interesting point.
We'll get to the Taylor Swift deep fakes that you've been waiting for in just a moment, Paul.
Yeah, I'm going to post actually 3 or 5 of my favorite ones. Hold on a second.
You know, they purely as research, I did it. You can literally search Google, deliver them to you. Well, see, Twitter's like, well, we're going to take them down. We're going to hide the searches. There's this thing called Google.
We call this the Pete Townsend defense.
Yeah.
Which was research.
Yeah, it was just for research, Your Honor.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just curious if Twitter taking it down had any impact, and obviously it does not.
Well, first of all, they only took it down for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
Well, and they also didn't take it down. What they did was just block any searches for Taylor Swift. Right.
Yeah, and all the
they don't have a department that could take it down. That's the problem.
This isn't a very sophisticated kind of a thing anyway. They just put her head on somebody else's body. It's not anyway. So we don't have to talk about that, but we will talk about deepfakes when we come back. But first, do you have somebody bringing you some whiskey, Richard?
No, the whiskey's right here. I'm good.
Okay. I can divert attention from you for a moment as I tell everybody about Club Twit. We're very proud of Club Twit. We started this 2 years ago, and I would say right now the most involved, most discerning, most active members of our community have become members, more than 10,000 strong, and we're really thrilled about that. And it's come just in the nick of time. I don't know if you've heard, but many podcast networks are out of business now. Many podcasts have shuttered their doors because ad revenue has declined so dramatically. It's all going to Google. It's all going to YouTube. It's all going to Facebook. It's all going to influencers. But we think we still have a job to do. I think we have a very important job to do. And maybe it was a mistake way back when I said, you know, we should let the advertisers support this. I liked it because it made it free. And we're kind of committed to continue to make our content free, but we would like to do it with your help. I really want our listeners and viewers to support us by joining the club. Would you consider, it's $7 a month. So, and you can give more. You can even do less. If you just want this show ad-free, that's $2.99 a month. So you can get individual shows if you want. The $7 gets you ad-free of everything. Gets you shows we actually do have behind the paywall in the club. iOS Today, Hands on Windows with Paul, Hands on Mac, which is, by the way, great, Paul. You're doing a great job with that. I love it. Hands on, it's kind of like the premium content on Therat.com. It's like it goes a little deeper, a little extra. Same thing with Micah Sargent's Hands on Windows, Untitled Linux show. We can't afford a title. You know, that's the problem. we also have Home Theater Geeks. Those are all club exclusives. There's other stuff on the Twit Plus feed. You get the video before and after every show. Anyway, we try to give you some benefits, but the real benefit is you're helping this network continue because we think the job we're doing is important. If you would like to help, I would just want to invite you all. We'd love to have you in the club. twit.tv/clubtwit. Enough said. Not gonna belabor the point. Rich has got his whiskey. I don't know what Paul's got. Nice, tall, cool glass of milk.
I feel like I need to go get whiskey. Yeah.
Let's talk deep fakes.
Just briefly, because I'm curious what people's reactions are when they hear something like, in this case, Microsoft, because of all the stuff that's been going on lately, says, you know, we're going to add deep fake guardrails to our designer AI. This is the thing that used to be image creator from Bing, right? Because we're not using the Bing name anywhere. So people can't use it to make porn. What's the first takeaway from that statement?
You mean you could?
I mean, I could have been using it for this. All you allowed people to make porn with this before, and now you're like, you know what?
You're kidding me.
That's crazy. So for whatever it's worth, Microsoft Designer couldn't care less. This is kind of like their Canva thing, but what they're really talking about here is that image creator thing, right? So it's built into Microsoft Paint. It's built into Bing. It's part of, you know, it's from Copilot. It's from DALL-E, right? From OpenAI. It's gotten really good. If you pay for Copilot Pro, like I do, it's a little faster, I guess, in certain, you know, at certain times of the day or something like that. I don't know, but the results are fantastic. I didn't know I could be using this to make high quality porn, but now I guess I can't. So I I was too late to the game.
Out of it, really. I guess so. Now, what do you use it for?
Mostly for promo graphics, my articles. I made a great one where I was like, I asked it to put the Microsoft campus in the middle of a scene from The Lord of the Rings, which is beautiful. It's a bunch of little Gandalf standing around. It was beautiful. You know, stuff like that. Useful things.
Right.
I guess the things that will make the world better. Anyway, so there was a story, one of those sources say type stories a couple of weeks ago that the DOJ and the FTC were kind of fighting or debating which one of them would get to investigate the Microsoft OpenAI partnership. We now know that the FTC won that battle. And it turns out the reason is they're actually investigating a lot of, well, several big tech slash AI partnerships to understand the business model, the goal, what they're doing. You know, Microsoft's, I think, is the most troubling because there's this notion that it's a sort of acquisition, not acquisition, and they're, you know, skirting around some legal requirements and, of course, some regulatory action that would have happened if they had ever tried to do that. But they're also looking at Amazon and Alphabet, both of whom have certain relationships with Anthropic, which is probably right. I guess OpenAI's biggest competitor, I suppose. So the EU is doing the same. I think the UK CMA is also doing the same. Yeah. They're looking at these companies and like, okay, so what, tell us a little about yourselves.
And I don't understand why there were DOJ was ever involved. Like the DOJ only makes sense if there's a criminal complaint.
Yeah. Right. And I maybe that was the argument. Like knowing the DOJ that we have today, they probably were like, you know, yeah, let's just bring them to court. You know, I'm sure that was the,
it seems like they got a lot going on right now anyway. So,
and never has an entity been so wrong about so many things that it would ever prevent them from trying and trying again. So I don't know, you know, whatever. God love them, I guess.
I thought the OpenAI Microsoft relationship deserved scrutiny.
Yes.
Doesn't mean there's criminality there. Doesn't even mean there's non-competitiveness, but it's an unusual relationship and it deserves scrutiny. And the upside being, if they find nothing wrong with that, that's a serious indicator too. It says, okay, well, these models then seem to be acceptable, but they did build a unique model in that relationship and it should be scrutinized.
Yep. 100%. You know, DALL-E, Midnight Journey, whatever, all these image creation
Midnight Journey.
I think that was a TV show in the 70s.
I got a Taco Bell reference in there somewhere. We'll let it go. Okay,
yeah, something. drugs were definitely involved. Is all happening now. It's all, you know, that's all kind of amazing. Obviously, video is the final frontier here. We're starting to see some interesting stuff there. Like Google showed off a very short clips of some of the kind of AI video stuff that they're doing. We know there are services that are going to upscale video games, right, to 4K from, you know, SD quality, and some of that looks fantastic. And now NVIDIA has a service that can convert SDR videos into HDR, right?
Wow.
Using AI and their special chipset. So
it's a couple steps past despeckling.
Yeah, this is, it's, we live in interesting times. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, definitely what is real.
Yeah, that's happening. And actually, that's it. So then, we can return once again to Xbox, because that now is all we ever talk about. Mm-hmm. So we haven't talked about Apple's compliance with the EU DMA. This is a very controversial and big topic out in the broader tech world today. A lot of people complaining about that stuff, but right in the middle of all this, Apple, like other companies, announced a list of things they're going to change in the EU, but less well documented. They're actually kind of changing a few things just worldwide, right? Mm-hmm. And one of those things is they're going to allow that thing they wouldn't let Microsoft do, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago now, and bring Xbox Cloud Gaming or a game streaming app to the store. Remember, Microsoft tried to do that back when it was still called Project X. Project X? Is that the name? That sounds wrong now that I said it. Project X? I think it was Project X. Whatever it was called. They're actually going to allow this now. So NVIDIA has GeForce Now. Microsoft obviously has their thing. If Stadia was still a thing, this would have been included. But they've done a complete about face on this. And I don't think it's like out of the goodness of their heart, right? I think this is to lighten the regulatory scrutiny that they're getting right now, because there is no version of this blocking of this type. Project xCloud, excuse me, I know I got that right. There's no version of the story where Apple comes out looking good here. Like, it seems so arbitrary. No one is buying a game on the service, right? They're paying a subscription fee and just streaming the content, just like Netflix does, or music streaming services like Apple Music do. So, you know, their attempt at of their literal blocking of that, it always seemed, I'm surprised that didn't get more regular or any regulatory pushback. Microsoft certainly was very vocal about it at the time. So they can do it. Microsoft has not said anything publicly about that yet. Semi-related, Epic has claimed that Fortnite is somehow coming back to the iPhone in the EU, despite their ban of that game. And I suppose that's, you know, we'll see what happens there. But right now, I think if you want to play Fortnite on an iPhone, I believe what you can do is use Xbox Cloud Gaming through the browser, right? Which is how Microsoft did the work around there. And then because I mentioned the Apple EU DMA stuff, Microsoft's Xbox president, Sarah Bond, came out against this very vaguely. I mean, well, not vaguely, very concisely. You know, she didn't say too much about it, but and she was very polite. People who have not been polite, Tim Sweeney, you know, he's been kind of outspoken about it. And then in the middle, I would say, and actually, this is probably the best written explanation I've seen of why this is bad, which is the founder and CEO of Spotify, Daniel Ek, who, of course, jump-started I believe his original complaint is what led to the DMA, right? This notion that Apple was abusing their market power and harming smaller companies, in this case, one from Europe, interestingly. But, you know, he basically wrote this really long-winded tweet storm, we used to call it, right? Where he kind of explained all of the tactics Apple is using and all the double speak and, you know, whatever. So it's worth reading, but I just wanted to point out that Microsoft is support. You know, this is not one of those things where someone from Microsoft says, these opinions are not those of my employer. It's like, no, this is the president of Xbox.
This is the employer. But this is how regulations are supposed to work. Right. It's that we want everyone to comply to them because it does make things harder. But as long as it makes it harder for everyone equally, that's fine. And so when someone's circumventing it, you point at them and go, hey, you're making me comply with this. Why aren't they complying to it?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting.
I mean, my favorite version of that is still the Poison Squad, or the invention of the FDA, where it was like, hey, you know what? All the companies are putting formaldehyde in the milk because then you don't have to refrigerate it. And you couldn't sell refrigerated milk because it was so much cheaper that way.
God.
And as long as you didn't feed it to your children, it was fine. It was fine.
Well, you didn't feed it to anybody.
Yeah. And so, you know, it took regulation to say you can't put formaldehyde in milk.
Consider how much you save in embalming costs.
Yeah. Right. Start early and pre-embalmed. Often.
Right. Nice. This just came out in an insider build on the Xbox, but if you have a Series S console, which is what I use 3 days a year when I actually use it now, you can actually configure this thing to have a resolution of 1080p, 1440, or 4K. And if you took screenshots, you would get screenshots in those resolutions. Obviously, when you're playing games, those things are scaled, and a lot of games on the Series S in particular do not play in 4K, but it's not going to support even screenshots at that resolution. So game or wherever you take a screenshot, it's going to be 1080p going forward. Now, this hasn't hit stable yet, so this is probably a month or two down the road, but that's coming. I would imagine.
Why are they taking features away? Like, what's the thing?
Well, so in this case, it might just be related to disk storage, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, now that you can semi-seamlessly save everything to OneDrive from Xbox, you know, maybe these things take up too much space. I mean, there's no reason if you're scaling it, like you said, look, I'm 4K, right? Yeah. But the game is only really running at whatever 1080p we'll call it. I mean, why capture that in 4K? I mean, it's just a waste of space anyway. So
yeah, that's fine. Charge them for the space.
Yeah. Maybe they got complaints. You know, we're never going to find out why, you know what I mean? Like they're never going to say.
It's interesting.
And then related to the topic from, actually we've come full circle. So
yeah, that's what we started with.
Yep. So Microsoft announced this past week, they're laying off 1900 employees across Xbox, Activision Blizzard, ZeniMax, whatever game studios. So Since this is about, I think it was over the weekend, maybe, or you were texting me about this. You were doing the math and you were right. You were dead on there, by the way.
Yeah.
It's tricky to find out how many employees Microsoft actually has, right?
Yes.
But we know from Bill Spencer.
They know, honestly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There were 10,000 people that came from Activision Blizzard. The total number was around 22,000 in Microsoft Gaming, which is part of
Xbox. Across all the units.
It's not everything, but it's part of it. So it's about 8% of that number. You know, Mike Ybarra, who was the president of Blizzard and was at Microsoft before that and left and now came back as left. You know, he's, and I don't know that those things are in any way related. He was a cool guy, actually. I didn't know him personally, but he was a guy I kind of know virtually or whatever. But I was kind of happy he was coming back to Microsoft, but that lasted about 13 seconds. So that's the end of that. So it's, you know, just, unfortunately, this kind of thing, I feel like was inevitable, right? I mean, this is too much overlap.
It's interesting. You would think that the Xbox group would be leaner. And ZeniMax, well, it's been, 4 years?
Right.
Like, I expected this to mostly be Activision Blizzard, and it is. But it's like, oh, hey, while we're taking out the trash, let's go, you know, cut that way.
I don't know.
Bobby Kotick, right?
Sure. Yeah, the trash. Right. We're going to need a bigger trash bag.
That layoff costs more than all the others combined. Exactly. That's one golden parachute.
The thing is, you know, as far as these things being small or leaner or whatever, back when Microsoft was a simpler company, what used to be called at one point MSN, right, was in this part, like a separate part of the campus geographically called Red West. Like, yep. The Xbox stuff used to be at something called the Millennium campus. Yep. And then when they were doing Zune, that was actually right in the middle of the campus, but it was like an aircraft sized building with, what looked like thousands and thousands of people just doing graphic designs that you could etch into the back of a Zune no one was ever going to buy anyway.
Guys who bought it thought it was great, but they didn't get the etching.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, so these things always felt bigger than they needed to be to me. And I would imagine today it's exponentially worse. So
yeah, I don't know the answer to that. It's a great question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because nobody's on campus anymore, right? So it's like, oh yeah, we got all these people. I just don't know where they are.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That makes it even harder. All right. So that's
a wonderful job. Summing up. How long, Paul, before we see you testifying in front of Congress on the dangers and evils of video games? Is that just around the corner?
No, I think video games are interactive. You're not just sitting there like a potato. I think they help with mental and physical dexterity. I think the trick is they can be addictive and you need to find a balance, and that balance is different for everybody. And it's like, you know, some people can have a drink and not be an alcoholic, but some people who have become alcoholics can never have another drink. And I think video games are just like that. So it's really personal.
You've really given them up, right?
Not entirely. So I've been playing, I played it enough to realize this isn't my kind of game, but I played the Resident Evil game.
Yeah.
The recent, I think it was Resident Evil 2, the remake on the Xbox, actually. I did that. I've been playing through Black Mesa, which is the remade version of Half-Life, the original Half-Life, which is,
you know, right.
There is a very real possibility that gaming for me going forward might literally just be revisiting games from the past that are starting to get remade and upscaled and, you know,
just straight AI nostalgia enhanced all the time.
Yeah. I mean, because honestly, I'm not saying there are no good games now. Of course there are good games, but a lot of there was some classic. There was an explosive period where it was like bang, bang. They were just coming out all the time. And like, I think going back and revisiting some of that stuff in a kind of a calmer way right now is not such a bad idea.
Yeah. I want you to play Pal World.
I have done everything I can do to block Pal World from showing up in any of my feeds.
I really want to play it.
I didn't put it in the news. I will point out it is the third fastest growing third fastest launch on Xbox ever.
It's Pokemon with guns.
And yeah, which everyone says, which got the attention of the people that own Pokemon.
It sure did.
So
Nintendo is well known for vociferously protecting their brands.
I don't think they have a case here because it really,
great question.
I don't look at this and think Pokemon, if that helps. I mean,
but the bottom line is you're capturing critters into eggs, and I'm pretty sure
that's the one where
my daughter had a thing called a squishmallow. Are you familiar with
this? That's hot right now. Oh, the squishmallows. Yep. Yeah.
So what this thing looks like to me are squishmallows with guns.
Which would be a better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the squishmallow guy should be upset.
I would not want to be going up against Nintendo for this. Yeah. They do not have a sense of humor in this area whatsoever.
Yeah. They'll drag this out as long forever. It'll be the best.
Well, and more importantly, it's a Japanese company.
Yeah, right. Oh, I know. They don't even
a Japanese company, it's not going to make international news. Nobody's coming to their defense. It's going to be done very Japanese. So I'm pretty sure somebody commits seppuku before this is over.
Rob Bott in our Discord is pointing out that Nintendo has not yet sued. So maybe they're just rattling their
ruffling,
biding their time,
ready to pounce.
Oh boy!
Yeah.
All right, coming up. Back the book time. I know you look forward to that, including a lovely new brown liquor pick of the week.
Here. And I'm in the UK. What did you think I did today?
Yeah. you're listening and watching, I hope, Windows Weekly with Paul Theron and Richard Campbell. Let's kick off the back of the book with your tip of the week, Paul. Don't say another browser, if you will, please. I beg of you. I'm just getting set with Arc. I'm just getting used to Arc. I love Arc.
Unfortunately, there is another browser in here, but you know what? Okay. I think you're going to be okay with it.
Okay.
none of these are directly related to Microsoft or Windows per se, although one of them is sort of, but I think these are all kind of important and they're all related to things we've discussed recently. So the tip is if you have a, that's not it. The tip is we've been talking about passkeys and passkeys are fantastic, but they're also very hard to use. Google has been very aggressive pushing these and they've added on Pixel first, but it's coming to every supported platform for this, to their Google Password Manager. Well, now, in the same way that they scan your accounts to see if any are showing up on the dark web or whatever, they're scanning your accounts to see if any of them are for passkeys that you're not using. And they actually put links in there and you click on it and it goes to the web page for the exact web page for that service where you can add the passkey to your computer or the phone or whatever. In this case, it's phone. So, for the first set, it's just Pixel devices, all supported Pixel devices. You have to be using the Google Password Manager, obviously, not a third party. It's not a bad service. It's a good idea. I was looking at it today on my Pixel. Very interesting. It kind of takes some of the difficult stuff away. I think, so that's neat. It's going to come to more devices, meaning Chromebooks or PCs with Chrome, et cetera. So if you are in that sphere where you're using the Google Password Manager, I think this is, I'm not saying this is going to put pass keys over the top, but I think this is a good step to kind of help them become more more common, I guess, for people. And they're also working with big brands to make sure everyone's doing pass keys. So, good for them for doing that work. They're evil in every other way imaginable. But
I have started using pass keys with your favorite browser, Arc and Bitwarden.
Yeah.
And, I use the Bitwarden pass keys and it's been working great. I'm really starting to like it. It's two-factor for most of my accounts. So I still log in with a password and then it'll say, okay, what's your pass key? GitHub does it that way. And I feel like this is a nice.
I think, by the way, for whatever it's worth, I think GitHub actually has the best pass key implementation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
For consumers, honestly, the way Chrome does it is really good. And Chrome also does the thing automatically now in Windows where it says, hey, do you want to use Windows Hello to authenticate everything? You're like, yep.
Oh, good.
And then it becomes totally seamless. It's really nice. So that works. So that's interesting. I know that the advantage of putting a passkey in a password manager is that it makes them portable. Technically, you're supposed to have a different passkey on every single device, right? But because the password manager is in effect your device and it has its own encrypted storage, et cetera, you can make one passkey for one online account and then use it everywhere just by signing into the password manager. So that too, I think, helps to make this stuff easier. I was talking to someone from a company. I can't say yet, but I was saying, what's needed here is this. There's no standard for this. So we need a standard for passkey portability. And he was like, wink, wink. Yep. We know. So
one would speculate that it would coming. Be in everyone's best interest to work on such a thing.
Exactly. And if only there was like an industry organization. Oh, there is. So, yeah. So there, anyway, people are working on it. Good people, et cetera. So anyway, just know that that's happening. So that's good. And then a couple of app picks in a way. One is one of the problems when you go from like Windows or the Mac to a, like, say, Linux or Chromebook is that you lose your ability to do that seamless sync of like OneDrive or Google Drive or whatever you're using. Well, Google Drive works on Chromebook, but the ability to kind of do that, I want to sync this folder and have it offline and have it sync automatically when I change things, yada, yada, yada. And there's always been third-party services that do this. And I actually, I haven't looked at this in a long time, but last past week I looked at NSYNC, not the band.
It's going to be me.
Yeah, because A, it works cross-platform, but it also supports multiple accounts. So for some reason you had, you know, you have like a Microsoft 365 family account and you have multiple accounts, but using like one account to store this and one account to store this because they all got a terabyte of storage. This is a way to put all those accounts on the same PC at the same time and do that kind of sync feature. So that's kind of cool. The one major missing feature is they don't have the files on demand functionality, right? You have to sync a folder or not. You can't just arbitrarily browse your entire cloud storage and then selectively sync stuff from there. You have to choose ahead of time which folder or folders are syncing. So for most people, that's not a big issue. And honestly, the performance and reliability is really, really good.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's just not ironically, but coincidentally, because we just talked about Arc, Arc used to have a mobile app on iPhone only. It was like kind of a companion app, kind of a goofy, no one really knew what it was. That's been recast as Arc Search, although in the future, it's just going to become Arc Mobile, right? And it will be on Android as well. But for now, it's just iPhone. And it's their take on Search. And it's basically just it's vaguely OpenAI / Anthropic based AI that does, browser things. Like you could type in an address and it will go to that address. But if you type in a question like who's going to win the Super Bowl or, whatever the question might be, it will use AI and do that summary thing. And as is the case with Arc proper, which again, this will soon be part of, there are certain people will look at this and just be confused because it is confusing.
I know it doesn't work.
Yeah. First of all, it doesn't work properly unless you make it the default browser,
which is really weird.
Yeah.
Cause it's really, feels more like a ChatGPT client really.
You can do things like I said, you can
Windows Weekly Podcast.
Right. Well, that's probably going to summarize.
Now it says browse for me. And so it's reading 6 web pages, including all of the ones. So here's the details. Look, it's a nice picture. Hosts, schedule, listening options. So it doesn't bring up a web page. It brings up a summary.
Yeah, you have to type in a URL.
Now I can go down and see the results. The search. So it's what Google's doing in spades with the knowledge graph, right? Where you do a Google search for shoes, you get a lot of information, but,
it's just like you see, like I'm looking for product reviews. It says customers say ...
I have to say I am with you though. And here's all the links. I'm with you on the fact that the browser company of New York, which is the
company that
does this.
I know.
I don't even think they're in New York, but anyway.
okay.
It's funny you say that because I watched the video
from them where they literally traveled to New York and were visiting. And I'm like, wait, I thought you were from
New York. No, I think they're from England. Anyway.
Right.
They're probably from all over. I think it's very interesting. I thing is kind of interesting. I agree with you.
Thank you for suggesting the data.
I wonder how they're going to make money because
that's what I'm saying. What are they going to do with that data?
They are not charging a thing for this stuff.
So far.
Not yet. I mean, they probably will, right?
I'd pay for it. Stuff, at least. Honestly, when you look at
a company like Google and you say, you know, we got to break this monopoly. They dominate search. They've got all this ad and tracking stuff going on. Like, how do we do that? You know, and then you look at the competition that has shown up and it's Microsoft with Edge doing exactly the same thing. Or like a company like Brave is, you know, the browser is exactly the same, but they're more private, more secure, but they have their own little goofy business model, but it's not going to change the world, you know? And you're like, well, okay, nothing changes. Right. And then you look at Arc and you're like, okay, I'm not saying they're going to succeed. I'm literally not saying that. But you know what? This is different. That's cool. And if this does succeed, the web as we know it becomes a different thing.
Look at this. This is a perfect example.
That's exciting.
Here's our Discord chat, and somebody put a link in there. Because Arc is my default browser, when I click it, it doesn't open the browser. It opens this mini Arc window without leaving Discord, which I can use to surf. And then when I close it, I'm back. Little things like that really.
I know. I know. Are great. I'm just fascinated by it. I wish. My problem is I don't use a Mac and an iPhone.
It's better on the Mac. I don't know.
By the way, it's actually, it is pretty full featured on Windows. I'm not, but I don't really, the iPhone app is not there really, right?
And it's never going to be Linux because, as you said, it was written in Swift and that's not a practical
there's language. No way to bring it to.
Well, there's ways, but I wouldn't. That's a lot of resources. And the
even Windows is goofy. I mean, it's still a little goofy.
But it does sync the account. So when I set it up, I love that. That was a big feature for me of Chrome and Firefox is that's account syncing. And I need cross-platform, you know. So I feel like
It's fascinating.
I appreciate you turning me onto this. And I'm starting to use it on the iPhone as the default browser.
These things usually go poorly for me. So I'm super happy to hear that.
Well, I'll yell at you later when I...
You're like, I use this Arc thing
and
it deleted all my data.
I can't believe you made me do this.
I'm just asking questions, I think is what we say.
People tell me that Arc's a great browser. Yeah. I've heard. And one of the things I like about...
people say...
The idea...
People I know.
What they're doing on the iPhone makes sense because Safari and all the other browsers are just like little browsers on your phone. Yeah. But really, when you open a browser on a phone, it isn't so much that you want to go to a web page usually. You know, you want to get some information. And so I think this kind of makes sense. Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I agree.
And you can still go to a web page. It's not.
It's the hurdle they have, aside from the fact that they're a small company no one's ever heard of, is that we are now so many years. I mean, the web is almost 30 years old. The iPhone is 16, whatever that number is. 17 years old this year. Amazing. We have memory. We do things a certain way. And that doesn't mean it's the best way. It doesn't mean
it's inertia.
We're very much used to the status quo, you know?
Yeah.
So they got to overcome that.
Well, the bigger problem here is they're making a product that every other company gives away for free.
Yes.
Maybe that's their strategy.
But they do it in a different way.
Let's make it's you different. Want yeah. it, and then you'll pay for
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. And then it gets insuredified, and here we go again.
Let me just try. What's the weather in Petaluma? And then you have some choices, but I'm going to hit browse for me.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I.
That's the name of the feature, right? Browse for me.
Yeah. It's reading six web weather pages to give me the answer, right? And a weather map. Mm-hmm. You still get the links if you want. It's got today's forecast.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's.
It's definitely stripped all the fluff off.
It's you made a weather app out of this.
It's an ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There you go.
Moonface, sunrise, sunset.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
This is incredible.
They've created a weather app on the fly.
Yeah.
They've created an app on the fly that is very specific to what you just wanted right now.
Yep.
You know?
And the information from those terrible weather sites.
Yeah, but at least it's aggregated.
Weather. The weather Nazis over at weather.com never saw it coming.
But first, watch this video of a flood.
You believe that it is snowing in Petaluma. But let me tell you something.
We are getting an atmospheric river right now, so it's dumping out. Yeah. So anyway, thank you, Paul. I won't yell at you for.
I'm so nervous about this.
No, I'm actually really grateful because I had tried Arc. I got the invitation very early, like May of last year. Tried it and went well. Okay, but why should I switch?
That's the hurdle. I think most people try it and they're like, you have to. You spend a little time and it's like, okay, hold on a second.
It's revolutionized my use of browsers. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. I don't know.
Good it's interesting that it grabbed you like that. That's really cool. Makes
me
want to try.
Richard Campbell, I think it's time for you to tell us about Run As Radio.
Well, I had a great guest on this week. Maybe you heard of her, Mary Jo Foley.
Oh, yay!
Who?
Yeah,
I can't get her to come on this show, but I'm glad she.
Had her at Christmas time. And in fact, this show was already in the can when she came on. Over the holidays there.
Nice.
Because I really wanted to dig into what she's working on these days over at Directions on Microsoft. And the whole licensing conversation was a fascinating one. a big piece of directions on Microsoft's business is helping companies negotiate better license agreements for themselves. And so like buying stuff from Microsoft is not a trivial problem. And really, while as much as I'm sure they're interested in you buying services from them, just this basic concept of, do you know what licenses you have? Now, do you know what licenses you use? You know, and what areas of growth are you going to have? And to just sort of build out the landscape of your license utilization, because it gives you room to negotiate. You know, you may have bought a committed to a set of licenses for a particular product that did a rollout that didn't go anywhere. And now, you know, you can almost claw that money back. So there's a way to maneuver here that you don't pay after a certain size, you just don't pay rack rate for stuff. And so it's well worth spending several days. You know, I have talked to folks that are involved in the licensing for their company, and it's like, it's a week of getting information together to really be able to now sit down and negotiate with the licensors and say, okay, this is what we did last year. Here's how it actually went. Here's what we're looking at next year. Here's how I want to move things around. Like, let's get to a fair number. And it was just fun to not hide from licensing. Like, the most common conversation on Run is Radio is like, listen, I'm no licensing expert, but, and this was a case where it's like, well, let's talk about how you really take licensing on in the head, because it's the bottom line piece. This is probably the largest single line item in a sysadmin's budget is the software licenses for the company, even more than the hardware. So yeah, it was great to just nail that down and pound on it for a while. It's been a good half hour.
Nice.
Yeah.
Really good. All right. What you drinking?
What am I drinking? So, I mean, I'm in London.
Yeah.
So I had to drop by the Whiskey Exchange, which is a lovely place just up in Covent Garden. I walked up there and I thought, you know, I'm going to go get a whiskey that you probably can only find in the UK. And the Flora and Fauna bottles are great for that. And this particular one is Daluin. Now, there's a lot more letters in the name than this point, which you actually pronounce. Like the I disappears.
It's like Worcester, Massachusetts.
Daluin. The Daluin 16. Now, this is a whiskey you've never heard of because it has no marketed brand. But it's a very old distillery. It was built in the 1850s. William Mackenzie stood it up in the Speyside, Aberlour. At this point, back then, it was a single set of stills and so forth. Today, it's only up to three wash and three spirit, although they're big. No peat in their product at all. They're Speyside. They do most of their aging in sherry casks. And those early days in the 1800s, they were built right on the train line and are kind of famous for all of their supply came and went by train. They had a major fire in 1915 that totally burned them down. And then a group of famous distillers, Buchanan, Walker, Dewars, all came together to rebuild it because it was actually kind of an important distillery. And in fact, those are the folks that merged into a company eventually known as the Distillers Company with a bunch of others. And in 1925, the Distillers Company was running it. And that, of course, became United Distillers, which eventually becomes Diageo. We've heard this story before. And the Walker in that joint operation that took them over in 1915 is John Walker, as in Johnny Walker.
Little Johnny Walker.
Little Johnny Walker, right? So, and that's where most of their whiskey goes. Like, this is a place that makes 5 million liters of whiskey a year, and you don't know who they are. They've never been a marketed product in the 170 years that they've operated. And they've always operated. They've been, even when they burned down, they did their processing elsewhere until they had operations back up and running again. So, yeah, I mean, Johnny Walker was a man. He's from the 1800s. We talked about this in the Mortlock show too, right? And he initially was blending whiskey from distant distilleries. And over time, he bought up all the distilleries and he got control of Daluin along with the others in 1915. At that time, he also owned Clannish, Cardew, Colburn, Talisker, and Mortlock. And this is what he was making Johnny Walker from back in the day. And then when United Distillers and ultimately Diageo forms up in 1997, they have an even larger package. But even before that happened, when it was United Distillers in 91, they put out, knowing that almost all of their whiskey was going to Johnny Walker, but they had barrelmen who were saying, like, there's some really good barrels here. We should bottle them. And so in 91, United Distillers produced a line of whiskeys all in the same style bottle. This is a conventional whiskey bottle that with the little swole neck, but otherwise a standard shaped bottle and a yellow label. And there were, they made 26 of them in their first edition in 1991, of which this is one of them. This is actually a 91 edition of the Dalian 16. Some of these became wildly famous and are impossible to find. The Rosebank's hard to come by. The Mortlach, if you can find one, is $800. These all initially came out at 30 pounds. This one today was 55 pounds. So it's gone up a bit, but not terribly. They didn't call it Flora and Fauna. It was actually a whiskey writer named Michael Jackson, no relation, who wrote that day. He called it Flora and Fauna, but it's one of those things where the name just stuck. And so they've done additional releases since then. You know, it was a 91, it was a 97, it was 2001. And it's very apparently hip in the whiskey business, if the whiskey collector business, to try and have one of every one of the Flora and Faunas. It wasn't a big deal back in the 90s, but today to find them all is pretty tough. And the price range is, you know, like I said, dramatic. I am not a whiskey collector. I am a whiskey drinker. And this drinks brilliantly. It is a classic sherry Speyside. Little hints of citrus up front, little bit of shock on the tongue, but goes very buttery. Just a classic caramel that warms you up as it goes down. And you'll notice you. I got this bottle this afternoon. I had a couple of friends visiting while I was writing it up.
It's gone.
It's almost done, you know. And enough that they said, you know, we're going to go to the whiskey exchange and bring a different one back for tomorrow because you fed us.
Wow.
This is hard to come by outside of the UK. It does not have an export stamp on it. This just says a for the UK stamp. This is not an export stamp. And that's how the Flora and Fauna really originally intended. That being said, if you go to a specialist whiskey place, you know, and I can think of a couple in San Francisco I have frequented over the years, you will occasionally find these Flora bottlings for entirely too much. And you don't know who they're made. You don't know them. They're not a well-known brand. But some of them, and this is one of them, is outstanding.
Wow.
I've talked about unicorn whiskeys. That whiskey you taste once and you'll never taste it again. My very first unicorn, the one that I realized the concept of a unicorn, was a Dalian. It was a 1972. Ooh. It was 30 years old. It was put in the bottle. I found it in a little whiskey shop. I found it in a bar in Edinburgh where they were selling Macallan 12 for £4. And here was one that was listed for like 25. And I'm like, what the hell do you pay for £25 for? And I had a taste of it. And it changed my life. and then when I researched it further, I realized there were only 250 of those bottles ever made. You had tasted something you will never taste again.
Never taste it was again. A unicorn. That's pretty cool.
And so besides the Flora and Fauna bottling, there are several other custom bottlings of Dalian. Gordon and McPhail, those kinds of bottlers, every so often they'll score a barrel. But if you really want to taste this whiskey most of the time, you'll taste it in Johnny Walker Blue.
The Dalian, which means the green veil, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to it's live beautiful. There.
And it's a proper space side. It's in some ways more honest than most, right? It really was made for the Scottish market. Most of these, you mostly see these whiskeys drank beside a pint of beer in a nice Scottish pub.
Might be worth a trip to Scotland just for that.
Yeah, well, you know, you usually do those cruise things, but I imagine we could actually get a whiskey tour out of it.
You know, I have Scottish heritage. I should really spend a little time. I've been there years ago when I was a kid. But
you and me, Borth, I'm one of those Campbells.
My grandfather was a Dunlap. Gordon Dunlap. And my middle name is Gordon from him. So I have every right to go there and wear a dress.
Well, I'd recommend we get some rooms at the Craigellachie. We spend some time in the Quaish.
Oh, it'd be so much fun.
We taste a few unusuals, and then we go see where they're made.
Paul, are you in?
I've been wanting to do this trip for years.
Sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. Richard, you probably could make some money if you put together a package tour for.
Well, brought
a dozen of us.
Yep,
done a few. We could.
Oh, you have
out,
done it. But, oh, all right.
Yeah. I've been buying whiskey for unusual people over the years. Some names you may know, but I prefer not to be named. Mostly because I take the time to go get the specials, nice. You know, go visit the distillery and nice. Talk to the distiller and very be able nice. To pull a cool bottles out. But if the Quaish is one of those very dangerous places. It's wooden floor, wall, ceilings, potbelly stove on the side, one side, big heavy drapes overlooking the Spey River. Big overstuffed chairs. The owner's spaniels are there for some scritches.
Oh, how fun.
And every single whiskey you've ever heard of, and many you haven't heard of, on the walls, ready to go. And I think I got to wrap up. They're in the room now. So
here comes another bottle. Bring in the Dalyane. Yeah. Mr. Richard Campbell's at Run His Radio, runhisradio.com, .net rocks, and he is in the U.K., back in BC next week, or you've got
No, I'll be in New Zealand next week.
Oh, my goodness. The tour begins.
You know, as you do.
Yep. We'll have a wonderful trip.
Incredible.
Mr. Paul Thurrott will be in. You'll be in Mexico City next week, I think. Yes.
Yes, I will.
Yeah. Yep. So we go international next week. Paul Thurrott, of course, is always available everywhere in the world at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. And become a premier member, and that way you'll get all sorts of good stuff. He also has his books at leanpub.com, including Windows Everywhere and the Field Guide to Windows 11. And together they are the Windows Weekly team. Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC, we gather together to talk about Windows and Microsoft and AI and brown liquor and all of that. I hope you will join us. You can watch live. I mean, it's not the best way to watch because you have to be here at that time. But if you are, we stream it on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. You can, of course, if you're a Club Twit member, you can live in the Discord and you can watch the streams as they continue all day long. In fact, if you're not a Club Twit member, please consider joining twit.tv/clubtwit. I think today's the last day for our Twit survey. If you haven't done it yet, we want to get everybody who is listens to all the different shows or any individual show. We want to make sure you're all well represented. So we need all the Windows Weekly cohort to go to twit.tv/survey24 to take that survey. You can get the show on the website while you're there, twit.tv/ww. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly. Great way to share clips. But of course, the easiest way would be to subscribe in your favorite podcast client. That way you'll get it automatically as soon as we're wrap up and put it out the window. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
Have a wonderful week. Safe travels to both of you. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.